This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Yeah, like a really good example of what I'm trying to say, just for if in case I'm not being super clear, because that happens quite often, in case not only Jeremy doesn't understand, is this Lieutenant?
Welcome to the A-Team podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
It's just like, what? Not everything I do is like horrible. Like, you can't have it both ways, old man.
Jay Boosh.
Damn it! Why am I always so ahead of the curve, and then somebody like Owen makes a deck popular, and now I sound like every deck brewer on the planet?
Scotty.
It's actually a secret ploy for her to get you two to spend more time together. Your mom next levels you.
It's all yeah, like serious.
And Jeremy.
Do you know how hard it is to buy Korean singles?
No.
And when you put Korean singles into Google's, do you know what you get? You don't get Magic cards.
And now, the A-Team.
Guess who's back? Back again. Bushy's back. Tell your friend.
Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
I created a podcast. If nobody wants to see Bushy no more, they want Scotty. I'm Chop Liver. Well, if you want Bushy, this is what I'll give you. What's up? Jay's back, in case you didn't notice. This is episode something of the A-Team, and I'm here with just Scotty and Scumbag Schofield, because stupid KYT is learning about his heritage or something.
Learning about his heritage?
Well, he's in China. He's Chinese.
He's in Hong Kong, yeah.
Well, that's not really actually his heritage, because, well, he's kind of an English Asian, right? So maybe it is.
I really don't know.
It's totally possible.
So, what's happening?
So, what's up? What's
happening?
Hello?
What episode is this?
I don't even know. Are we 203 at this point? Hey. I think we are. I think it's 203.
Oh, yeah.
203. Or is it 202?
203.
The fuck? Two shitty hosts go round the outside, round the outside, round the outside.
Oh, 202. It's 202. It's 202. Okay. Last week should have been 203.
We
last
did
week
record
should have been
one
202.
Last week.
No, we didn't record one last
no,
week.
No, we skipped her.
Shut
we
up.
Skipped last.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Oh, we totally did.
Having iTunes problems.
Fuck those Apple folk.
And nobody's paying for a Patreon for Mana Deprived to make more, so we couldn't fix it because Apple's like, fuck you. Ugh. Give me some money.
Give me some money, he says.
Anything for money. Man, I was in school, and somebody was like, I was having a rough day, and somebody was like, come for noodles. And I was like, I just hold up my lunch, because I'm a fucking, of course, I'm that cool guy at school who's, like, bringing his own lunch.
Brown yep. bag.
And they're like, come on, just come for noodles, we'll come for Vietnamese. And I'm like, oh, Vietnamese.
And that place is really,
it's not just noodles, it's Vietnamese.
I'm like, so good. But so I can't, good. And I can't bring my food in there, even if I could go. And then he's like, whatever, come on, I'll buy you some noodles. And I was like, all right, well, it's money, anything for money, I guess. And then some guy, because I'm in the trades, of course, was like, suck my dick. And I was like, yeah, just give me some fucking money, I'm poor. And he was like, no, gay. And I was like, yeah, well, I guess. Yeah, you got me, I don't know. But I mean, anyways, the moral of the story is, I don't know if you're gay if you do it for money, but I'll do it for money.
Sure.
Somebody give me some money, or anything really. It doesn't have to. I don't have to fillet you. I suppose.
I mean, it could be handy.
Yeah, like a nice little fucking ketchup bottle surprise.
Hey.
You know, shake.
Whatever everybody wants. So what's happening? What did I miss?
All sorts of stuff. I mean, there's been, like, a metric shit ton of Magic that's been played.
Yeah, a metric shit ton of Magic that's been cheated.
This too?
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Everybody's cheating now.
Yeah.
Apparently it's a cool thing to do.
I mean,
I got to experience the Great White North.
If I was going to cheat, I mean, wouldn't I just do that and go undefeated? I mean, doesn't really...
Isn't that what happened
Jay,
anyway?
If you did that, I think you could win Rookie of the Year.
Maybe I should try. Like, fuck it. This is like the whole Lance Armstrong thing all over again, right? Where they're like, oh, he cheated. And everyone's like, it's a card game. Who fucking cares? And then he's like, no, he's not the best bicyclist of all time. And then they were like, well, if we give it to the next guy in line who didn't cheat, then we gotta go to, like, some guy from Italy who came in, like, 48th place.
Because they all cheated.
Because they all cheated, not just Lance there. So,
well, I don't know if that's necessarily fair, but...
You know. Well, I mean, that's what happened. I don't know if it's fair, but...
Well, I mean, fair in the sense that I don't think that that's necessarily factual.
It is. That's what they said. There was a big investigation, and that's what they said. Which is why it was such a big farce.
Oh, okay, I thought we were talking about, like, actually still continuing the comparison to Magic.
Oh, I mean, no, I mean, cheated. They gave it to... What did they... Did they give it to the next guy in line, or did they give it to the guy who lost?
No, for the Rookie of the Year, when... Yeah. We are... Our Rookie of the Year is no longer our Rookie of the Year, and we have a new Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. The new Rookie of the Year was the runner-up. He was the runner-up Rookie of the Year.
Right, okay. Which is
Perez.
Yeah, Ray Perez. I think so, too. And the only reason that people are complaining about it is because they initially came out and said, well, if for some reason he's suspended, it'll go to an at-large slot.
Yeah, it'll be the next at-large.
So here's the thing. Let's just say that somebody from the... that had an at-large slot or whatever, right? Some slot for some reason.
Yeah.
Won a Pro Tour. Okay. Now all of a sudden, that slot that they had, that they had earned for being an at-large, is now passed down to the next at-large, right?
Yeah.
So similarly, if somebody had qualified at a Pro Tour, and they couldn't make it or they were suspended, they would pass down the bid to the next. They would open up another at-large slot. So what that means is that the next highest person for pro points down the line would earn the invite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm okay with this because I think with Rookie of the Year, it's an at-large spot. It just has like one little qualifier on it that they have to be a rookie. And I think that this is the only one where you can have the clean hand down that isn't just giving it to the next at large. Like, I think this is the only exception.
There was
a case where a guy won a pro tour with the wonderful, thumb cheat. It would be a case of that. I don't think you give it to second place. I think you give it to an at large.
Yeah.
But I think that this is an at large qualifier spot with the condition that you're a rookie. It's okay to hand it down to the next rookie. Although I think the policy originally was it went to an at-large in general, and they changed it when they made the announcement. Because, I think somebody had announced on Twitter that if Botcher, if he was banned, it would go to an at-large.
Helen said that. That's right. I was going to say
it
came from Helen. Yeah. And that's why everyone was initially all up in arms about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because everyone wanted Chris Fennell to go.
Yeah. In other outrageous news, something I just noticed. We can go back to the cheating in a bit. Why is Pearl Lake Ancient an $8 foil?
Because of the Pro Tour.
Yes. Oh. It's a one of in the control decks.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Sometimes in the sideboard, but sometimes in the actual.
It's a 6/7 that can't be countered.
Yeah, it's the primary win condition in the...
Interesting.
In the blue-black control deck. Now, there's two versions of the blue-black control deck, though, so... Yeah, that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah, so you know what I think is interesting, too, is that I've always kind of thought this, but maybe, Jeremy, you can spread some light on this. How come when one of these motherfuckers cheats so badly to get banned for, like, fucking eternity...
Yeah.
How come Wizards is never just like, haha, we fucking banned you, you suck, we're banning you for these reasons, we're putting it out on blast, you know, you're a murderer, like, kind of thing. They're always just like, oh, here's the updated ban list, and we're not going to tell anyone really what happened, and if they do, they're like, oh, you know, they're like really kind of like skittish about it. But I feel like I don't want them to be unprofessional about it, but I feel like, I mean, what's wrong with saying this guy fucking cheated a whole bunch and we caught him and we put him away? Like, that's what the cops say when they catch a thief or a murderer. They don't say, like, well, you know, he's got some charges that are pretty extreme. But
you know, like, there could be a couple things. Like, maybe there is a legal aspect to it of this could lead to some sort of defamation case or whatever like that. Like, they don't have, like, the actual evidence to hold it up in a court of law, but they have enough evidence for their personal thing to hold. Maybe it's just against their code of conduct. So, you know, like, there's that aspect to it. Maybe there's an aspect that they just don't want to glorify the cheater.
Yeah, I wonder if that's true. I wonder if that's a real thing. Like, if you have enough evidence to ban someone, I wonder if that's a thing where you could have enough, where you could have enough to ban them, but not enough to.
Well, I worked for a US-based company, and in my orientation at that one company, they said, if you're ever fired or let go, we will confirm that you worked for us, but we will not give you a reference.
Yeah.
Because they were, it was just the best policy that they had to avoid any sort of, you know, defamation.
Oh, yeah. Lots of places will do that. Even if they fire you, they'll even, a lot of times on your ROE, they'll put that they laid you off.
Yeah. Like, there's.
Because if you fire someone, you have to be able to justify it.
Yeah. And like, even if you have stuff like evidence, that.
Even if you have evidence to justify it, that doesn't, like, there's always still the chance that they're, like, a sympathetic whatever, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, you know, it might just come down to something like that. Usually, if it comes up, like, you kind of know, because, like, the updated list is really supposed to be for, like, TOs and people to, you know, just actually reflect and ban those people. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they're supposed to use that list, which is just not really functional. But you kind of get a gist of who's banned in your community for what.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and if you need to find out, you should be able to find someone to tell you. But I kind of like the fact that they don't really go out and parade it around. I think in this case here, like, they actually made the announcement based on the fact that this was the player or the rookie of the year, and there would be a change in the attendance of the world championships because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, they really don't make a press release unless, you know, there's something, unless there's a reason to it, like, unless there's going to be something that it's going to, you know, affect the dialogue of, you know, who's going to be at a tournament or in the Hall of Fame or something along those lines. Or maybe if it's just, like, completely unique when it comes to something like the God Book incident and stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
So that would be my thought. I don't know the answer to that question. That might even just be like, we need to figure out some way to get Helena on the show. And because I think she would be great to have on the show. We should really try and figure that out.
Oh, we can. We just got to figure out all the things that we want to talk to her and ask her about ahead of time so that HR can clear it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's just something we don't do.
Well, I mean, like, what, ask us, get prepared?
Yeah, exactly. We could just make up a whole bunch of questions and then not ask them.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good.
Probably works really well.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, I'm going to go with no on that one.
No?
Just throwing that out there. No. No, that's not going to work.
No?
No. Sorry, dude.
Are we sure?
Yeah, that ain't going to work. That won't fly. That shit won't fly. But we can, I mean, that's fine. If that's what you want to do, you want to get Helene on the show. If you guys want Helene on the show, then you have to tell me you want Helene on the show.
And
tweet her. And then we'll make it work.
Yeah, then we'll find the people. There's people. You can find people.
Yeah. Like, Helene's really great about responding to tweets. So.
She's fantastic. I was chatting with her today.
There you go.
Yep. She's awesome. She is la-awesome.
That's because she's French.
It's true. That's why I said la.
Yeah,
la awesome. Did you pick up what I was laying down?
But no, it's not la awesome. Why is awesome masculine?
Oh my god.
No, it was lawsome.
Lawsome?
Lawsome.
Awesome.
Lawsome.
Lawsome. Like that with that.
The L apostrophe. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's a verb. Or because it's a vowel, rather. Yeah.
Okay, my French is really rusty. Is there, like, a gender neutral, or does everything have, like, a gender association?
Everything
has gender, yeah.
Wow.
Almost all languages are like that.
It's true. I think English is the only one that really doesn't.
That's probably not the only one, but like, I don't think German does.
That's a good question.
No.
Our German, our German listeners should tell us that.
Like, my Lotus Cobra is spelt with a K? So awesome.
Thanks, Germany!
Yeah, thank you. I still have to get my hands on an Ubermeer, though.
An Ubermeer?
Yeah, Mir Superion is the Ubermeer.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And I my favorite German card is in my cube. It's Mana Crypt, which in German is Mana Schatz.
Mana Schatz?
Mana Schatz.
Yep.
Cool.
Plays the mana shots.
I'm not remotely surprised that that's your favorite card.
Probably because you fucking shit on your opponent when you play it.
I mean, Soul Ring for free is pretty good, I heard. I have heard these things.
Oh, wait, not Mana Crypt. Mana Vault?
Vault.
Oh, so mana Vault?
Point, right?
Mana Vault.
One in three?
Yeah.
Well, that one's a little bit less explosive, but still...
Still good.
Still good. Still very broken. Yeah, I agree. Still very broken.
So these cheaters.
So there were more than one.
Yeah, who else was it?
There were three cheaters that were recently banned from the DCI.
For so long.
So one of them is like 3 years. And this is the one I think that everybody's the most upset about. And it's Alex Bertoncini. Chidi Face was finally banned again.
For doing the same thing he's always doing.
And he was banned for 3 years.
And, like, I guess the big thing with him is that they didn't have, like, a specific documented cheat, but you know how they always say that, like, you have a permanent record? Well, there was enough BS going on, enough point people pointing at him, and enough all this stuff here, and he was just, I guess he was just racking up warnings hardcore, like, since he's been back. Yeah. So they sat there and they're like, okay, so you are getting warnings every game for, like, 5 tournaments. You're doing something wrong, and you think you're abusing it. So, previous record, that, probably investigations, probably a lot of, like, statements and stuff like that put in, and voila. Not to mention, if you actually make LSV mad...
Oh, there's that.
Like, that's... That actually carries a lot of weight.
What happened on that, like, that specific cheat?
With him?
Where he got so mad. Yeah.
My understanding
all I
was
ever
hear
anyone talking about is
he was playing against Chion.
So hold on. So hold the phone. Hold the phone. So we're going to have Chion on the show.
Oh, well, there we go. That's going to be a great Chion story.
So I'm going to put a pin in that one, and we're going to get that story straight from the horse's mouth.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Chion is, he was going to be on tonight, but unfortunately he's got Nashville, so he can't make it tonight. So we're going to have him next week. Especially after he, LSV, and Ifra win the damn thing.
Yeah, not to mention, we told him that if he was going to come, if he wins the damn thing, and he is going to come, he's got to bring the other guy, so we can actually talk to LSV, too.
Correct.
They have not agreed to do it, but...
Don't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's the law or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I concur.
All that kind of stuff.
Contracts.
Yeah.
I'm in.
I'm using the word binding. I heard that a lot on legal shows. Bind.
So, yeah, that's where we're at.
Binding. Yeah, and then the guy who kind of tipped it all off was, what is his name? Some nobody who's a cheating face, cheater, who won, was it the SCG event?
Trevor Humphreys.
Humphreys.
Yeah. Humphreys won an SCG event. He was playing Jeskai aggro. And his shuffling was suspect.
And that's the thing, is he had, like, brazen ones, because he was doing it right on camera, and he was super obvious about it.
And he didn't... How did he get caught?
On video. People were watching him, because they were...
And
they
it, was
were
just, it was just some random watching, right? Like, because he... Yeah. Like, nobody caught it in the booth? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was people were watching, and they're like, oh my god, this guy's cheating blatantly. Then people were making, like, little, you know, highlight videos and stuff like that, and pictures and everything like that. And the funny part was, is the way that SCG had it set up when they were doing the mulligans, is they were showing his face on one side and, like, his hands on the other side, because they had the top-down view. So you could actually see him, like, thumbing the card and doing the nosy goblin down at it.
Yeah.
You know, to see what was going
on. Holy shit, really?
Yeah, like, they had, like, the perfect imager picture of the cheat.
You know what I think is shitty about all that stuff? And I had a little bit of, like, a two-tweet conversation with that.
Okay.
On Twitter today, The thing that I really find annoying with it, and like maybe as a judge you can do this, but like this, it comes back to the same old of always like, how severely do you persecute?
Okay.
So if I'm at a tournament, and this happens all the time when I play like any kind of tournament, and I hand my deck to my opponent and they shuffle it and they look at my deck when they're shuffling, I can call a judge, but they can easily deny it.
Of course.
And I mean, it's always a he said, she said, and I mean, judges have, I don't know, they say their ways to determine who's telling the truth or not. But I feel like, I mean, if I am playing against somebody and I'm like, yeah, they looked at my deck when they're shuffling, a lot of people are saying like, yeah, then call the judge over and the judge will just shuffle your deck for you and et cetera. And those are all fine for the actual him cheating me into a mulligan.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get rid of the fact that he knows what I'm playing or saw specific cards in my deck or didn't get reprimanded at all for doing that until you like catch him doing it like 10 times. Like, it's almost like the Bert and Cheney thing where it's like, well, you know, he's been getting warnings every tournament and winning, but we don't have enough like evidence yet because you just said he looked at your deck. And so I just feel like that's something that's kind of annoying for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people don't know, like, they already kind of don't call judges because they don't want to be the guy that looks like that. Like, a lot of new players, right?
Yeah.
Like, because even when it's not something that's, like, accusatory, when they're just like, oh, I don't know if that's how that works. What do you think? Yeah. And then their opponent's like, no, that's how it works. And then they're like, well, and then even sometimes me as the opponent, I'll be like, well, we can call a judge if you want. They're like, oh, no. No, let's not. I don't. And it's almost like it's like we're saying like this is my property line, and they're like, "Well, is it?" And you're like, "Well, we can call the cops." And they're like, I don't know. We should call the cops, because like, but I don't know any judges that have ever just walked over and been like, "You're fucking banned. You're an idiot." Which actually, now that I said that out loud, is what I'm kind of asking for. Like, hey, this guy looked at my deck, and I want Jeremy to come over and be like, you're banned, you fucking idiot. Get the fuck out of here. And obviously you can't do that because, you know, if I'm just lying. But that's what people feel like judges are going to do, so they don't want to call judges. But in fact, judges do the exact opposite, so I don't want to call judges.
Nobody's
calling judges.
Yeah. The odd thought on that is, one, you've definitely hit the head on the nail on the hammer or whatever.
The nail on the hammer.
Yeah. The hammer on the head of the nail. I don't know. Whatever. There's a hammer involved, the nail, and you hit it.
Oh, God.
And that's that new players don't want to be, you know, like there's this, it's in all society, it's in all things, but nobody wants to be a rat. And that's a really tough part because judging isn't necessarily, you know, finding out who's right and who's wrong. Sometimes it's a lot of just fixing the game. So if you think of Modo, you know, sometimes judges are just trying to patch things up, just trying to restore the game state.
You know where I can never cheat? You know where I play where I never, ever get cheated, except by Worth, is Modo.
Yeah, exactly. Lucas Xiao with his little post, total sidetrack, where they're round one of the PTQ crashes, they restart the PTQ, he wins game one because his opponent had a zero-card deck. And then he gets land screwed two games in a row, and he's just like, Modo's amazing. It's just an amazing piece of work. But yeah, judges in the same case, like if you are uncomfortable, you call a judge over. And like, that's the thing. It's a matter of like clearing things up, because the worst part is when you play in those games where if you had a judge to be impartial to come in and kind of clear things up, it's sometimes so much better than like playing this like super passive aggressive game with a guy you think is like cheating you, or like you finished the game and you never called the judge and you're just like,
yeah,
oh man, I think I got scummed hard there.
And then some guy's like, oh yeah, I played that guy before. Did you mulligan a lot? And you're like, yeah, why? And like, yeah, because he cheats. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, thanks like, for fucking telling me, dipshit.
Yeah. Always call the judge. Now, the other side of it is, and it's the tough part about judging, is that even the judges don't want to be that guy. They don't want to be the rat.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the case of like, when you're judging, what is your goal? Is your goal to maintain the integrity of the tournament? It's all about customer service, right? Like, it's all about good customer service. So you want both players to walk away happy, and you want the judge call to be quick. Because if the tournament is on time, then everybody's happy. That's another part of customer service. Like, judging is all customer service.
Yeah.
But the integrity of the tournament sometimes takes a side to it. You know, like, you want to present policy, you want to follow policy and everything like that. But the investigations tend to fall by the wayside with a lot of newer judges. And that's the area where it's got to come in there. So, yes, you're going to run into this situation where it's like, you say he looked at your deck. He says he didn't. There's obviously going to be that immediate, like, okay, we got to figure out what's going on. Anytime that it's happened to me in a tournament, the opponent's always been like, I accidentally saw it.
Yeah.
In Salt Lake City, like my first GP, my opponent shuffles my deck like in the second game of like round five or round six. I'm not too sure where it is. And when he shuffles it, he takes my deck to hand it back to me and put it on the table. And he flips it up to like directly look at the bottom card. I'm like, you just looked at the bottom card. And he's like, no, I didn't. I'm like, yeah, you did. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I didn't see anything. It was just a land. And it's like,
it was just a land.
Like he actually said that he did it. And at that point there, it was just a looking at extra cards. But what you need to do from that point there is sometimes
what's
you have
looking at extra card.
What's looking at it? Looking at extra cards is a penalty.
Yeah.
Because there is a difference between cheating and making a mistake.
Yeah,
yeah, but he didn't.
To be a cheating penalty, the person has to, one, know that they're doing something wrong.
Right.
And two, have to be trying to get an advantage out of it.
Right.
So my opponent was able to convince the judge that he didn't realize that it's actually against the rules to look at the bottom card of my deck.
So, like, I immediately want to hit that judge in the face.
Well, and then there's some facts to it where,
what
like...
What the fuck? I didn't know... Wait a minute. So, sorry, you're telling me that, A, in Magic, ignorance is an excuse. You
yes.
can just say, I didn't know, and that's fine. Whereas in real life and reality, that's not. And two... He somehow admitted that he did that,
yeah.
And then said, I didn't know it was wrong, and then told you what he saw, and
yeah.
then got a minor penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
And that's the thing, is that
fucking
you have to...
Perfect.
And that's going to come down to judge by judge. You know, judges are going to make wrong calls because, one, they're human, two, there isn't... It's a mentorship-based program, and if you don't have mentors... You're probably, unless you know you've got the right personality and the right head for it and everything like that, and very good self-talk, you're probably not going to be a great judge.
Right.
And like, that's not a knock on the judge program, but
Jeremy
it's
Schofield,
at the same time.
Calling it like he sees it. Good for you. You're probably not a good judge. Jeremy Schofield, 2014.
Well,
I love
I'm
it.
Not a great judge at all. Like, that's the thing, and I don't have any real mentorship. I've got an L2 in my area that's been very good. And, you know, when I travel to GPs, I get like short bursts of mentorship. But, you know, you really have to go out and seek it out. It doesn't come to you. It's hard to get into judge course. Like if they have a judge convention, you have to apply for it. And a lot of people don't get accepted because of limited space and stuff. So there's a lot of problems with that. But yeah, going back to it. So you've got this judge in this situation. So we've run through it. We'll use the Salt Lake City example.
Yeah.
Buddy now has a penalty on his slip. If he's a cheater, he's going to cheat again. Like, you may have the guy who does the one-time cheat. And there's some cheats that are just blatant, like, you know this guy's cheating. But the looking at extra cards cheat, he's got that one time. And he can run that one time. And maybe it catches up with them. Maybe they notice a trend of, geez, this guy gets a looking at extra cards penalty every tournament.
A lot, yeah.
He doesn't get them multiple times in a tournament, but he gets them in every tournament. That's his one time. You know, we gotta look into this a little bit more. And then there's the event type thing where you have the talk with the guy and the judge says, okay, well, you know, like, I'm sorry, I can't really do this. You know, maybe it's a looking at extra cards. Maybe he believes that he might have looked at it. Maybe he doesn't believe the fact. Maybe he thinks that there's some sort of unsportsmanlike conduct thing, a communication error. Whatever the case may be, maybe he doesn't penalize the guy, but there's a chance that when he walks away from it, he walks up to the other judges and say, hey, we got to keep an eye on this guy because his opponent just said that he did a peek during the shuffling and let's just, you know, not observe him where he can see us, but like, let's keep an eye on him. Let's watch him at the beginning of the next round and see what happens.
Sure.
Because those guys are going to do it again and again. And if they start to get multiple penalties, the system tells you, hey, these guys got penalties. If you ever call a judge for anything like that, and there's a penalty that's going to be issued, one of the first questions the judge will ask you is, do you have any previous penalties this tournament? They have to answer yes or no. And that's the thing, is that if they answer no and they do have penalties of that type, they will get found out.
In the same tournament?
Yeah. So, like, if you get a looking at extra cards in round one, and then you get a looking at extra cards in round two...
Oh, yeah,
then,
for sure.
Then you start to, like, get yourself into... We're going to be talking about upgrading. We're going to be trying to figure out, we're going to be keeping a closer eye on you. We're going to be doing all of these things to go,
yeah,
why does this keep happening? Because mistakes happen, and that's what the system allows. The system is very good to allow for mistakes.
Yeah, and that's the problem with things like that, and it happens in the real life in the justice system too. But the problem with things like that is that there's no way for you to fix that for that first or second or tenth or hundredth opponent that happens to. Like, for example, like this, what was this guy's name? Humphreys?
Yeah.
He was Rookie of the Year? Or Butcher?
No, Butcher. Jared.
So it went to the guy that was runner-up.
Yep.
But there's no telling, like, what would have happened had Butcher not, like, say, fucked the guy round one. Maybe that guy round one wouldn't have gone to the 0-1 bracket, and then he wouldn't, you know what I mean? And so the problem is, like, because it's going on for so long, like... I don't know, the trickle-down effect is so high that it just feels... That's why people are upset. It just feels so bad because... Yeah,
it's a big feel-bad, but at the same time, like, you can't let perfect be the enemy of good. Like, you can't have a perfect solution. Like, it's
yeah, no, that's really, and that's too, the problem, right? If you're too hard on people, then, like, people will get punished. But, like, my issue is that, like, because it's a Magic card game and it's not prison...
Yeah.
I would rather people... had harsher punishments, because then nobody would cheat in theory, because the punishment would be harsher. You're gonna have a couple of people that, you know, generally get fucked and shouldn't have, just like, you know, people that are on death row and shouldn't be. But like I said, like if I tell someone, hey, you can't Doomblade my shrouded guy. Or my hexproof guy, let's say. And they're like, oh, but I thought hexproof just meant opponents. And, like, since I'm reading it and it says my opponents, I thought that was you or whatever. And then they're like, well, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, does it? And they're like, oh, no, I guess not. And then I'm like, well, should we call a judge? And, like, I think we should, just so that you know. And they're like, no, don't worry about it, because they feel they're afraid that you're going to ban them. I mean, those people have never gotten fucking 18-month bans.
But that's the thing. Those people have gotten those bans.
You're telling me that somebody who didn't know how Magic worked, like, they didn't know untap, up,
just
draw?
Talked about how people don't talk about bans. Like, bans are not typically reported.
Well, that's what's stupid about it. I think that's stupid. Like, I think there should be a registered sex offender list.
Those bans do happen.
Registered sex offender list. Okay.
Yeah,
but that's what the ban restricted list is. Like, that's what the ban list is. Like,
if Burton Cheney's banned for specifically cheating X way or whatever, you should tell me that. I shouldn't have to hear it from the community. I should hear it from the DCI in public, and you should humiliate that fucking person. Like, you're not doing it maliciously. You're stating facts. Like, we got a call that an individual by the name of Jeremy Schofield, who, you know, had murdered his wife and kid. So we went there, and it was true. And so now he's in jail for murder. Not, we got a call about somebody who did something, and we caught them, and so now something happened to them. And then
I agree with that to a little bit.
I agree
to the point of, like, tell me what the cheat was. Don't tell me how he did it. Just tell me what the cheat was, or tell me the reason why he got banned. And they used to do that. That list used to actually have, like, a basic, like, a very, very, like, quick quip of why the people were banned. And it was fantastic. Because every now and then you'd have a couple drinks with buddies and you'd bring up the list and you'd see the story about how guy threw chair at dog.
Yeah.
And he got a 2-year ban for that.
Like,
and
it's just, I want to know. The other thing is, like, I want to know that Saito got banned for slow play and not for drawing extra cards, so that if Saito's slow playing me, I'm aware that that is a habitual repeat offense that he does.
And that's the thing, is that the people who do the bans know that's happening.
Yeah, but I don't. So now I don't know to call a judge because he asked to read my Jace 10 times.
But that's the thing, is you have to, you should call a judge any times. It doesn't matter who's reading your Jace 10 times.
But
you should,
like,
just
saying,
call a judge.
That's like saying,
it's not your responsibility to know that.
Oh, no, of course not. But what I'm saying is, if I'm walking down the street and somebody's committing a crime that I don't know they're committing, it is my responsibility as a citizen to know every law of the society that I am a part
Absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely, and
but
the comprehensive rules are available to you.
There's no way that anybody does, and that's why if a cop is driving by, they don't wait for just somebody to call the cops. So if you know that person A is a habitual slow player, like if I know that there's a sex offender in my neighborhood, great. And if I don't know, well, lucky for me, the cops will tell me. That's and, like, part that's of the thing, society is that I live in.
Do we have, and I hate to go back to it, but do we have a competent judge force that can handle having that kind of information?
Well,
because
I
if
mean,
you get a guy who has the mistake, has gotten a slow play, is that the guy that the judge is going to sit on saying, well, he's gotten a bunch of slow plays before, so I should call a slow play on this guy? And I know that that's kind of a bullshit argument, but at the same time, like, that's going to be what's going to happen. You have that piling on effect. It happens
in
every
game
of war.
But you should be aware that he's there and that he may be doing something. Do you know what I mean?
You should be able to approach it with a blind view at the same time. You should be able to say, he's breaking the rules this way, so I have to intervene this way.
Yeah, like Bert,
I shouldn't be knowing that this guy is a cheater in that sense. If he is a cheater, then he's going to get caught and he's going to get thrown out of a tournament. And he's going to get disqualified.
Yeah, but how many people does it take for him to fuck over before he gets caught? Burton Cheney was banned for 18 months for cheating. Then he came back and played for how long before he got banned again?
But that's the thing. The cheaters have a reputation.
No, so, but he came back and he played for how long before getting caught?
So he knocked Larry out of top 8 at Boston.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, he's cheated a lot of people.
That's what I'm saying.
Now, so I'm not saying that he cheated him, but, you know.
So the question isn't whether or not we need to equip the judges better. It's like, do we just need a bigger hammer?
Yeah, we need both. Should have both. Like, yeah. I'm the judge of who plays my cube. So if you have a reputation of being a cheater or a thief or a shithead that I don't like who doesn't shower, then I just tell you, no, you can't play my fucking cube. Or if someone says, hey, do you mind if this person comes? I'm like, yeah, these are the reasons why. Not like, yes. And then someone's like, why? And then I'm like, because reasons, but I'm not going to tell you. Like, and if somebody else is like, hey, Jay, that guy, you shouldn't let him around your cube because he's a thief. Then I'm like, oh, okay. I'm not like immediately like, get out of here, thief. I just make sure that if my cube is sitting around, I don't leave it without vision near that guy. Maybe it was 10 years ago and he stole one thing when he was 8 and maybe he doesn't steal anymore. But in that case, then what does he have to worry about if I'm watching him? He has nothing to worry about.
And that's the case, that it might just come down to the fact that we just don't know why they can't give us that information. So, like, we guessed on it earlier, and maybe that's the case. Like, there's a reason why they're not telling us, because they used to tell us the information and they took that information away. Yeah. And I have to believe that they did it for a reason, because they do not like to change things.
It's probably because somebody complained that it was basically like oppressing them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it's like it's all the old victim, like the old victim, or sorry, the what's it called? The doer becomes the victim or something. The what is it called? Defendant? No. The who did the crime? What is that guy called? Why can't I think of it?
Plaintiff.
Yeah, is it plaintiff? No, the plaintiff. Yeah, anyway. It's like the old, like the guy who does the murdering gets all offended that everyone knows that he's a, you know what I mean? Like, or the thief. The thief admits that he stole stuff. There's video evidence of him stealing it. But then at the same time, he doesn't, you know, if you say that he's a thief, he gets really mad about it.
Okay.
And it's like, dude, like you admitted that you stole something in court. Everybody knows you stole it. There's video of you stealing it. Yeah, well, fuck you, bitch. I'll kill you. It's like, man, just why don't you just chill out and just say that you're trying to change your life, and then maybe we'll feel bad for you instead of going on Facebook and having a big rant about it. Like,
so the problem that we have facing us here really is when we talk about the judge staff, is the judges are already allocated at a specific, like, judges are hired for an event based on, you know, certain expectations around expected number of judge calls, number of expected players, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
blah,
exactly. There's a spreadsheet.
And so the problem is that knowing that these jackass cheaters that need to be babysat every round are attending your tournament, stress your judge staff. And judges are already getting, like, the stiffy as it pertains to compensation anyway. Right?
I feel like that's not my problem. Like, I feel like that's the judge's fault. Like, if you for slave labor and you don't bring that up, like, the thing that I have a real big problem. Not to cut you off, Scotty, I'll let you go back because I feel like we haven't let you talk. But I haven't been on the show in 8 episodes, so maybe fuck you.
Listen, when I have a problem with it, you'll know.
My issue with the judge is that it's your fault. Like, the judge community is almost like a cult. Every time that you see a judge, that you talk to a judge, they're very indoctrinated people in terms of like they. It's difficult to explain. I, for example, with John Medina, I love talking about religion with John Medina because John is so faithful. Like it's mind blowing how faithful he is. But he can just talk to me about religion or not, and he doesn't constantly hammer me with faith talk. And if we do talk about religion, he's not. His arguments are not trying to convince me to be religious. And I feel like that's how a lot of the judge program goes. Like, if you talk to a lot of judges or see a lot of discussions with judges, a lot of them are, like, almost Kool-Aid drinkers. They can't admit problems. They can't admit fault. They can't take creative criticism. And then any time that you see somebody complain about the judge program, be it a judge or not, even if it's not like, fuck judges, they're so shitty, but it's just like something like, hey, I live in a remote area in BC and there's no, you know, how do I do the judge program because there's no one to get, like, to mentor or train me. And they're like, you know, they'll respond with like, if you have a problem with the judge amounts in your area, you should step up and be a judge. And why don't you think about that? Instead of them looking at it and being like, well, why isn't there a judge presence there? Maybe we should try to promote that more. They just say, like, why don't you be a judge? And it's like, well, I don't – that's not my calling. Like, why don't you go be a fucking flight attendant? Why don't you – like, that's not an argument that I – you know? And then the person's like, well, that's kind of what I'm saying is how do I be – even if I wanted to be a judge, how do I be a judge if there's no judges? And then they're like, well, you'll have to travel to GPs. And, like, to somebody who is – like, what kind of fucking answer is that, right? Like, hey, we shouldn't pollute. Well, if you don't think that we should pollute, then why don't you start your own fucking company, like of whatever I do, and then you show me how to do it by not polluting. Well, I mean, where I live, there's not really a market for that. Well, fuck you. Why don't you travel and make your own company and then don't pollute there and show me how great you are at not polluting? Whereas, like, both arguments are kind of, you know, ridiculous. But at the same time, like, you could at least work – you could try to work with that person or work with the stores in that area to see if maybe there is interest in judges and the people that go to those stores didn't know that – how that worked. Like, and I feel like that's how it works with this whole, like, cheating, not cheating, more judges, less judges, get paid more, don't get paid more thing. It's like every time that somebody criticizes the judge program, they say, well, judges are really stressed and they're already working for minimum wage or less than, and they are, and it's like, well, stop working for that then. If, and then they say, well, if there's no judges, then there's no tournament, like, community. Well, I'm pretty sure that that's not true. I'm pretty sure that if all the judges tomorrow decided to go on strike, hey, by the way, you know, we voted, it came out 51-49%, judges are now on strike, there's no more judges. Eventually, it might not be right away, but eventually TOs/wizards/somebody would say, like, okay, let's have a talk and let's hash out a contract instead of just like, hey, we're going to pay you in packs and we're going to pay you less than minimum wage. Okay. But it's really cool because you get to be part of this community and that makes you feel great.
But that's the thing. That's exactly what it's all about though. Like the judges who love judging, the judges who are hardcore into it.
Yeah.
They go because they love hanging out with each other, and the judging is just kind of like a way to subsidize that.
I think that's, and I have nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing
yeah,
at
and
all.
That's just the case. I don't think it's an excuse to say that they're not allowed to do good work.
No,
because
no.
The terms to become a judge is actually getting a lot tougher. Like they're doing a lot of work to make sure that the judges you get at GPs are going to be strong judges.
No, and that's what I'm saying. I don't fault that at all. I think that's great. But I just don't want to hear them complain about how it's so difficult to be a judge and how they don't get paid a whole lot and how they work long hours. And it's like, well, that's not my problem. That's your problem. Stop putting up with that. Fight for your right.
Absolutely.
That's my issue with it. Anyway, Scotty, so you were saying.
Well, I just think that having these people at our tournaments is a really, really big turnoff. And I think that it impacts us on levels that I think maybe we're not even addressing, you know, like we're not really even bringing it to the forefront. And I feel like that's a mistake and we should be, because I mean, these people are really, really detrimental to our game.
Oh yeah.
They're like full on fucking douchebags.
Yeah.
And if you have to cheat because you need to feel good about yourself, because you need to win, go play fucking Yu-Gi-Oh. Like I'm tired.
No, you know what? Not even that. Why should they get fucked? Just look at yourself in the mirror and figure it out, buddy.
Well, that's the problem, is that society's not set up for those people to have that introspective. It's very rare that somebody gets caught doing something wrong and that they actively change. A lot of people take it as I need to figure out how to do whatever I got caught doing sneakier, better.
And that's why we have to say those people can't play with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's interesting because I think that if you were to sit down, so I don't know about you guys, but if I were to sit down in a sanctioned match of Magic against Alex Bertoncini,
yeah,
I would 100% just stop and call a judge and ask him to watch our match.
I would too.
Absolutely.
But there's nothing stopping that judge from saying, no, I'm too busy.
Appeal.
But I mean, that's what I mean. Like.
But that's the thing, is you don't have the right to do that. That's unfortunately not a thing that there's a right to do.
And they'll say, oh, that's discrimination. Just because he cheated once doesn't mean he's cheating now, and blah, 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 blah. And then they don't. And then they don't watch their game. And then it's like, well, what do I do? I tried to do everything I could as a person.
Well, that's the thing, is you watch him. You pay attention to your game.
If
he does something, then you call a judge over and you have a reason.
If I don't know the entire comprehensive rules and I miss something, that doesn't help me not get fucked. And then in 6 months I find out, oh yeah, he cheated me.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. And so I agree with Scott. What Scott's saying is these people are detrimental. I don't want to go to a tournament where 10 people are fucking cheaters. And I don't even know any of these people. I don't know who this fucking Bocher guy is or Humphreys. I know Alex Bertoncini only because he got caught cheating 2 years ago. That's the only reason I know who that guy is. And I have to think that most Magic players are like me. They're into Magic. Wizards has said a million times over that most of their player base is casual, kitchen table Magic players. And I'm not saying they're stupid. I'm just saying, like, they're not as invested in the Magic community as we are. So, like, Scotty has a stream where he plays with, you know, all these celebrities and pros and everything. And I don't know who a lot of them are because I don't follow it as hard as Scotty does. Even people think that we are celebrities, and there's so many people that don't even have never even heard of us, even though all their friends listen to our podcast. Like, so it's like, well, how do I even know who to watch? I know to watch fucking Saito, who I don't even know what that guy really looks like. I saw him one time, like 10 years ago. And I know to watch Alex Bertoncini, who, again, I don't know who that is, but I would see him on the match slip and then know to maybe watch him. But then I'm going to be playing poorly because I'm distracted. And then I play this Bocher guy. I don't even know who that is. So he cheats me, and I don't even know that he cheats me. Like, and I feel like then the judge community tells us that they're so important and we need them. And I agree, we do. But then it's like they're not doing what they're supposed to do, I feel.
That's a fucking ridiculous comment to hear coming out of the announcement that these guys have been banned from competitive play. Like, that's one of the stupidest things you've said, Boosh. Like, the fact that you're like, the fact that these guys were banned is a demonstration that they're not doing anything. Like, that's just, I can't wrap my head around
it. So here's the challenge. They're obviously not alone. There's lots of other people that are obviously running these cheats if these people think that it's okay to do it.
Absolutely.
So the problem is that there's a lot of negative stigma that's going around this. Like, Reed Duke even tweeted, he's like, you know, this sort of stuff, the saddest part is that it makes you not want to play Magic, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that we now all of a sudden, like, so let's just say you're at an event, and I mean, this already happened. It's happened to Anthony Lowry. Like, you're at an event, your opponent has to mulligan a 5, because they just get, because Magic happens.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, you know, I guess you're just cheating me then. You know? And I mean, like, is that how we want to be?
Yeah, but that's
now,
that
now
happens
in,
already.
In all
that happened
fairness,
before this came up.
Oh, no, no. Well, maybe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But not nearly as much as it will happen tomorrow.
And it's not going to remain. It's going to be one of those things. That's the hot topic right now. Everyone's getting cheated. So, oh, everyone's a cheater. In 3 weeks, nobody's going to be saying that bullshit. It's the same thing. It comes and goes. The guys who are going to have the flaming crutch who can't take responsibility for the randomness of Magic or their inability to play the game properly are going to complain, oh, you know, I think I got cheated by this guy.
But the thing is, like, so now I say you're cheating, and you say, yep, no, I'm not. That's just, you're just saying that because everyone's cheating nowadays. And I'm like, well, I mean,
well, that's everyone a good thing. Is you don't have to
nowadays,
have that conversation.
So I feel like I should watch you closer. And then I watched you closer, and I thought you were cheating. And then now I look like a bad. And like, so now we're just going in circles where people don't want to call judges because they don't want to look like rats.
But that's
people
the thing. That just call judges, fucking judges.
People that
call
judges
everything.
Look like rats. And then people that like, and then people want us to call judges, even though it takes a year to ban someone for cheating.
But that's the thing. If they get caught, if you call a judge, if they get caught cheating at that point, and it happens all the time. That people get caught and investigations happen, that person gets banned. It's done.
That list has got a lot more than three fucking names on it.
That list has tons of names on it of people who get banned at everyday events. People who get caught cheating at everyday events.
It brings me back to my question of how long did Burton Cheney play between this ban and last ban?
And that's the thing.
He's
the exception. Like, if you want to use him as like the Hail Mary, the corner case, yeah,
it's
sure.
Not a corner case. He got banned twice. That's what you're saying. You're saying.
But that's
the
thing. He is
works.
The corner case. He's
you're
the guy.
The
He's the one guy.
Works.
He's the high profile guy who slipped through and eventually got caught by the system the way the system's supposed to work. It's not like we have 100 Burton Genies out there. We've got.
Dude, you just said that. You just said a million people just got banned.
But that's the thing. He's the one. Your whole argument is the fact that he got banned, he came back, and he got banned again. And he played all this magic in between.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm assuming. I don't
but
know
But, like,
how
that's the thing.
Is.
He's the high-profile name. He's the guy. He's the guy who came back, did some stuff. Everyone was trying to go in there. Nobody could pin anything on him. And then eventually they just said, you know
that's
what? There's
point.
Enough smoke
that's,
here. There must
exactly,
be a fire. You're gone.
That's exactly my point. That's exactly
what you fucking just knocked down everybody? If
just,
you fucking reshuffle
want,
and you knock over a card
yep.
on there, you want the judge to come over and throw you
yep.
out of the tournament?
Yep,
is that what you want out of a Magic
yeah.
tournament?
Yeah,
nobody's going to fucking
careful.
Play competitive Magic.
Then I would be
Your
careful,
argument doesn't
careful.
Make any sense because you don't play competitive Magic.
Maybe I would if I didn't think everybody was somehow gaming me and I couldn't
oh
call the judges
God.
Over and prove anything because he accidentally didn't know that he couldn't flip my deck upside down and look at the bottom card.
But that's the thing is
like,
if he does
fuck?
That,
if somebody,
does something so
if
dramatic,
that, that,
he's going to get thrown out of the tournament.
No,
he's going
you said
to get disqualified.
You said he didn't. You said he got a looking at extra cards penalty. That's
yeah,
fucking horse shit. That's fucking horse shit. If I came to a tournament and anybody who was older than 3 years old, who knows the difference between right and wrong and wants to be in my community, that I paid, you're talking about customer fucking service, I paid fucking money to be here. And then I say, this guy fucking flipped my deck upside down, looked at the fucking card, I fucking caught him. He said, oh, I didn't see anything, I just saw a land. Which means, A, he knew it was wrong because he didn't say shit until I caught him. B, he fucking did it in a secretive manner because he didn't want me to know. So, again, intent. And C, you're telling me this guy didn't know that was wrong? He didn't know that. He's never played a card game before. He's never played a game where you have secret information like fucking Scrabble, where
yeah, but
you're not allowed
like,
to look at
that actually happens
shit.
All the time. Have you ever played casual Magic? Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I talked to this
and
guy
you know
about
what?
It.
Every
I talked
time
to
I
him
play
after the
Magic,
fact. It
my
was his very first competitive tournament. This guy was at his very first
okay.
competitive
so
tournament.
What?
But okay.
when I play Kitchen Table Magic, my opponents don't get to look through my deck or look at my fucking hand.
No, but they no, sometimes.
They don't.
But when I first started playing Magic, when I first played my garbage Merfolk deck that I traded a deck of the Star Wars competitive card game to another person for, because I wanted someone to play Star Trek with, and they didn't want to play Star Trek, but they wanted me to play Magic. So we traded decks to try and convince the other guy that our game was the right game. Magic obviously being a far superior game. When I was playing the Merfolk thing, looking at the bottom of your deck was a totally cool thing everyone could do. You could look at your opponent's bottom of the deck. You could look at your bottom of the deck. Nobody knew what the rules were. I didn't know that shit until I started to go to F&M and start playing competitive tournaments.
Okay. So that's fine. But then we bring it back to the fact that you said, as a responsible person in society and part of the Magic community, it's my responsibility to know all the rules so that I can
Absolutely.
Catch you cheating. So then again, it's this guy's responsibility. A, it's his responsibility to have a fucking brain and know that you're not allowed to look at secret information. What's the point? If you could look at the bottom card of my deck, why wouldn't you just shuffle my deck so that you could see every fucking card?
But that's
so
the thing. Are we afraid of this guy?
Number two.
Are we actually
two,
afraid of this guy?
Two, if you didn't know that And apparently you played with Jeremy Schofield, Scumbag Schofield, at his kitchen table magic, where everybody just looks at the bottom of everybody's decks and nobody knows the rules. Well, then you've already also said that you should be able to know the rules so that you, as a responsible person, because there's not one judge per person, can play the game correctly. So which is it? Is it you're too stupid and naive to know that something clearly wrong is wrong, or you should know the rules and not do it? Which one is it?
It's,
you can't have both.
It is 100% both, because the rules actually have that intersection where both meet, and that is our cheating penalty. The cheating penalty says, if you know and you're the responsible person, then you get the ban. If you don't know, now you know.
Hmm. So it's tough, right? Because
absolutely. That's the thing. Those two lines intersect.
Sure. At some point. But yeah. I mean, as players, right, we need to make sure that we are protecting ourselves. But at the same time, I don't think there's really that much hurt. Or that there's that much harm, rather, in the judging staff being a little bit more being a little firm.
Yeah, no,
firm.
100%.
I mean, you look at it this way, and I mean, if we're giving out game losses for failure to reveal a morph, okay? Honestly, I understand that the intent behind failing to reveal a morph is probably, yeah, somebody fucking played a land on me. Honestly, the chances these days of somebody actually morphing a land, okay, are like really, really, really low. But if they forget to tell you, it's a game loss, right? And because of that, you've got people that are angling, and even in games that they know that they're dead in, they're just waiting to see if their opponent doesn't reveal it. And I think, like, it is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But you that's the tough part of a policy.
Sure, but so what I'm suggesting is, and I think that, and I agree, governing policy or creating policy is always a difficult arrangement,
yeah.
Right? Because you have to try to consider both sides of the equation. You have to consider the people that are being cheated, the people that are cheating, and the judge staff, right?
Yeah.
And what the capacities and implications and potential punishments of each one of these individuals is. But I don't. So this came up on Set Talks with Cedric Phillips and Patrick Sullivan, and they had a fantastic discussion about it. And I think that one of the things that came out is that I think that there's not enough consistency. And I think that there are some penalties that are ridiculous and other penalties that are too lenient. And I think that what it really comes down to is, what is the threshold for proof? Right? So. Yep. So, and I think that's the real, real challenge. And like, this is a point that Patrick brought up, and I 100% agree with him, right? Is that as it stands right now, you go to like law, like legal criminal law, and you need to be able to prove without a shadow of a doubt that this person is guilty.
Yeah.
Right. Is that the standard that we really need to be in for Magic the Gathering, for a card game, which is privately run, for these tournaments that are privately run? You know what I mean? Like, I think that's ridiculous. So previously, I think it, like, based on how the punishments have been dished out and how long people have been allowed to play, despite, you know, how much smoke before the fire is discovered has been created, that hasn't always been the case. Right? Like, there's just no way. I mean, you think about how long people were complaining about Saito's slow playing and how he's cheating and how he's bad for the game and how long that went on before he got his ban.
Yeah.
Okay. Things like that, very clear indication that this is a subjective penalty. And as a result is sort of like, nobody wants to be that bad guy. Nobody wants to drop the hammer because everybody just wants to run a good event because the judges are so overworked anyway that they just want to run a good event. But like, ultimately, that's as damaging as the cheating, right? Because you're letting them, you know, you're letting that stuff slide when maybe it needs to be a bit more tightened up. And that's all I'm suggesting, is that if we're going to remain so stringent that somebody doesn't reveal a morph, that we're going to give them a game loss, or they misregister their deck because they write Lightning Stroke instead of Lightning Strike, as an example, I mean, that's maybe a bad one, but you get the idea. Lightning yeah. Bolt instead of Lightning Strike or whatever, and it's very clearly standard instead of modern, and it's very clearly a Lightning Strike in his deck instead of a Lightning Bolt, but he gets a game loss anyway.
Well, he shouldn't.
Okay, but, right, there are some yeah. people that may happen. Yeah. But the point is that that's... But we have to wait how long for people to get banned for clearly stacking your opponent's deck or, you know, or all of the shit that Bertoncini pulled? Like, that's ridiculous.
But that's the thing with the stacking the deck thing. Like, who knew about this? Who knew about this 2 months ago? Like, it wasn't a known quantity. And now that it is a known quantity, like, it's being cracked down.
And great. So maybe that's the situation. Like, and I know Jay keeps bringing up Bertoncini because, unfortunately, he is...
He's a perfect high-profile target. Like,
well, it's not even that. It's just, like, his cheats are based on a perception of sloppy play.
Yes.
And we all know damn well that the kid is sharp as tack, right? Like, he very clearly... And it's tough, right? Because he's actually good at Magic.
Yeah.
He's actually very good at it. But unfortunately, he's better at misdirection and shade,
yep.
right? And so it's kind of like, well, yeah, I get that he almost made top 8 or he did make top 8. Like, he's pretty good at the game. Like, he knows his deck and you ask some questions, you know. But then you go to your opponents and you hear all these things like, yeah, well, we got into this confusing situation where, you know, I don't know if he put 2 back from Brainstorm or not, you know, but we were all confused and it was just this board state that got... And, you know, those stories start to pile up, but like, how long are you going to just say, oh, well, I guess we'll just look out for it next time?
That also comes into the factor that, like, he's an easy target. And, like,
so
at
I'm
that
not,
point, there is, yeah, if they're going to make it so that you're going to ban a guy, like, maybe lifetime bans are the way to go. Maybe you have to say you're not allowed to play our game at all anymore. But what's going to happen is, there are going to be people who are going to get long bans who are going to say in 4 years, you know what? I really want to play competitive Magic again. I miss it. And those guys there are going to come back to a great deal of scrutiny. And there's still a responsibility to say, I need to see the cheat. Because if something gets confused, if you're losing to Bertoncini, then it's going to be really simple to say, oh, well, it's Bertoncini. He probably cheated me. And there's still got to be an impartialness where you look at it and say, well, I need to see the cheat. And like, this is the case where they saw enough of the sloppy play that it's like, it doesn't add up. We got to get rid of him. But there's a great argument out there saying, like, maybe they shouldn't have banned him. Maybe they should have waited until they caught him red-handed. And that's where the video stuff starts to come in. And that's why we got his last ban, was the video stuff came in. The evidence was there.
I mean, the other thing, too, is do you want somebody that's that sloppy and having that much of an impact on your judge staff and your tournament experience? Do you want him playing at your tournaments anyway?
Well, that's the thing. The TOs at any time could have banned him from the tournaments.
Right. So, okay. So whose discretion is it? Because maybe that's the issue.
But
maybe it's just...
The TOs have the ability to do that. The TOs do not have to let you play Magic.
Okay. But the TOs like to try to, you know, defer to the DCI.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, my God. And could you imagine the fallout and the public outcry if you went to a tournament and the TO, like, just banned somebody on hypothetical cheating or on like, where do you draw the line then? It's like, well, I'm banning you because you said something bad about me on your podcast.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We had a guy in town who was banned from a PTQ because the store owner said that the guy owed him money. So
yeah.
He wasn't allowed to play in the PTQ that store hosted. And, like, that was a big blowback from that.
Right. Yeah. So you can't tell. So, like, I'm really not going to buy the whole, well, it's really up to the TO.
But no, it is one of the TOs. There is like,
it
what
may
we're talking about
right.
here is risk assessment. We're talking about, like, the value of doing something risky. And that's the case where it's the TO didn't see the value. The DCI did not see the value in this point here. And that's where they had to let the case grow until the value made sense.
I think the motivations behind bannings for tournament organizers and the DCI, I think, are they're two different discussions. I don't think it's fair to lump them together. But I understand what you're trying to say. I just don't think it's fair to lump them together.
This is going to be, like, a screwed up thing to say, but if we're going to have a devil's advocate part of this, like, what if Bertoncini didn't cheat? What if he's just a sloppy player? You know, like, it's completely unreasonable to say, but at the same time, like, it is a less than 0% chance that that's actually the case.
So this is going to sound as equally fucked up to say?
Yeah.
But if that's the case, I don't need you at my high level tournaments.
Yeah,
I'm actually okay with, you know what? I don't want you here. And like as a player,
yeah,
I don't want him there.
And he's, I think that that's part of the system. Like, I don't think he got banned under the dirty cheater clause. I think he got banned under the too inept to play the game properly clause. Sure. As a cheaty face.
Sure.
Because, like, that's what the system's going to do is that, you know, like, there's going to be the habitual slow player. Everyone's got one in their community. The guy who just can't finish. He's the guy who always goes to time and stuff like that. And then eventually he's going to get the ban, and it's going to be the DCI's way of saying, like, hey, buddy, yeah, you can't play in the competitive events anymore because you really need to speed up.
We've had local stores that have done that. We've banned people from the stores because they were the type of people where they'd play the dirtily blue-white control decks and, like, they'd win game one because it's a control deck, and then game two, they'd board out every single one of their win conditions and do nothing but just stall the game to time.
Well, that's actually against the rules. That's actually cheating.
Which is why
I'm talking about, like, we've got a guy in Edmonton who just plays the game very methodically, very slow, and does not play a game of Magic that can end in the time frame. We do not believe in any stretch that he is trying to go to time. We think that he's trying to play fast. He just doesn't play very fast. He's just a slow guy. And that's the system. If it's going to say, it's like, eventually you're going to tip off enough of these warnings that they're just going to say, you know what? Time for you to take a break. You can't play in the big events anymore. And the guys who are getting banned for that are still being told why. Like, they get a case, they get to present their own case, and part of the investigation, they get to send their statement in, they find out what's going on. There's communication between those two people.
So, okay. On the note of defending themselves.
Yeah.
Did you guys read the Examiner article?
Yeah, I actually read that while we were going through this.
Is that the one where the guy said, if I cheated, wouldn't I go undefeated?
Yes.
Yeah, that was like such a... The article itself was like... poorly written and shitty.
Well, it's Examiner, so anybody can submit one there.
Oh, I see. I almost felt like it was like one of like Steven Menendez. Is it Steven Menendez that does the fun, like the mock-up stuff? The funny
satire? No. Matt Sperling.
I almost felt like
How does Menendez fit into that?
No, I almost felt like it was one of Matt Sperling's like joke articles. So. How do you feel about cheating and you're such a cheater? And then the guy's like, I didn't cheat, so fuck you. And I was like, okay, wow, what a great article I'm reading here. But yes, I did. But it was so bad. Like, it was like, if people didn't think you were guilty before, they certainly do now.
Yes.
And like, that's one thing that I'm going to keep circling back to the judging thing because I don't know, my brain's wrapped around it right now. But it's so funny that even from the judging side, and like you hear experienced judges explain it to the newer judges, but there's this thing where it's like, you know, somebody made a mistake and you're just thinking in your head, okay, like what's the fix for this? And they don't want to do the investigation. They just want to fix it so they can get the game going again so that they can walk away and the game is progressing and the tournament's going on time. You know, they want to just get in there and fix it. And they always say that, you know, like one of the best things you can do is just ask, well, why did you think, you know, you can look at the bottom of the deck? And sometimes the person will just like, blah, 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 like, oh, blah, blah. And then at that point there, it's just like, no, this guy's 100% cheating. Like, I was observing a tournament run at Casual REL. It was a draft. For whatever reason, they did a time draft. So it was, you know, interesting in that spot there. And there was one guy who was peeking at the guy next to him's hand. And it was one of those cases where, like, it was because the guy next to him hadn't given him the pack, like, so his hands weren't occupied, and he was glancing up at the guy who he was passing to before the guy had made a pick, before he had sorted the cards. Like, literally, he picked up the pack, and the guy would look and then go to look at his cards because the cards would finally be in front of him. And it was one of those things where it's like, you're not playing the game by the rules. You're breaking the rules. And it looks like you're peeking and you really need to, you know, stare at the table in front of you, because if this was like a PTQ, like you'd be going to Dairy Queen at this point here because you're looking at his hand. And the guy's like, so I'm like, I don't know what you're doing. If you're glancing over there, what are the kids? He's like, oh, I wasn't looking at his hand. It's like, no, you exactly were looking at his hand. He's like, no, 100% I wasn't looking at his hand. And at that point there, like if it was a competitive event, like the guy would be gone because he's lying now at this point. And that's all you have to have now is you have to have a guy lie. And it even goes to like Jay's concept of like, you know, guys saying, don't call the judge over. one of the things that like I've learned in my short time doing it is judging. Well, like when we go to the cheating thing, I said, you know, they have to know that they're doing something that's against the rules and they have to be trying to gain an advantage. And if not calling a judge over is an advantage to them, then that fulfills that part of the cheating. You know, like by them saying to their opponent, nah, we don't need to call a judge. Like they are trying to get an edge. They are trying to prevent themselves from getting caught. That is considered getting an edge. That is that fulfills one of the two parts of cheating. And like, there's all those like little things there where it's the matter of having these experienced judges. And if we get more of these experienced judges, and if this new system works out, because the new system, as much as like I said, that the mentorship isn't necessarily where I personally feel it should be, the new system to get to L2 requires that you have sought out the mentoring that you may not be getting, that you have learned certain things, that you are now doing all these things, that you are interacting in the community. Like one of the things that they have everyone doing is you have to do a tournament report. So you have to write the story of the tournament that you participated in on a forum that other judges are in. So you have to actively now communicate with the community of judges and kind of inbreed there. So that creates, you know, these forced mentorship situations. And I'm just hoping that as we get better judges who are willing to stop and ask why you did that, we're going to pull out a lot of these cheaters out of the system early on. And then with video coverage now kind of taking off all over the place, we're also going to have like this crew of witch hunters in the background who are going to pull these guys out of thin air in a sense. Like I know the Boucher thing, there was an actual investigation that happened and it got to somebody and everyone just started going through all of his matches. I know that there's a website and I'd love to find the link for it. And if I do, I'll give it to Kyle to put in the notes, but it goes in there and it has all of Video Magic. Like all these coverage matches, it's all done up where you can search by hashtag. So you can look up Jared Boucher and it'll show you every match that he's done on coverage that's archived on the internet.
Wow.
Like it goes through and it's like, okay, we got Star City matches here. We got GP matches here. We have a Pro Tour match here. We've got a TCG player match here. And it goes through and it brings up all that stuff. So now people can go, oh, well, you know what? I think something's going on here. Or the DCI is like, well, geez, this guy's getting a lot of slow play. Well, let's look at his coverage matches and see what's going on. Oh, you know what? Now we have video evidence. Let's get rid of him.
Yeah.
So the system, I think, is getting better. It needs a lot of work. It, you know, it's a little bit of judges. It's a little bit of players. It's a little bit of everybody. But at the same time, it just, it really sucks that we have people cheating. And I just hope that they stop.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Well, this is fucking depressing.
It is a little. So let's pick it up a little. Commander 2014 is in big full swing.
Shit. This is Scotty's wheelhouse.
And it is a bit of my wheelhouse. I actually had the privilege of spoiling the Commander card for Mana Deprived this time around.
With Mr. Seal Smooth.
With Mr. CL Smooth himself. So that was actually quite an experience. Chris and I basically, I just started the article and I shared it with him on Google Sheets. And then he hopped on and we just started writing back and forth. So it was pretty sweet. But yeah, the card we got was the big bad demon, the lieutenant demon from the black deck that basically is like a 4/4 flyer for black 3. But his lieutenant ability is, he gets +2/+2 if your commander's on the field, and then whenever he deals combat damage, that player sacrifices a creature. So, card's pretty good. I think it's perfectly fine. There's a bunch of decks that are going to want that effect, so it was really neat. But I'm actually really impressed with a lot of the commander stuff that's coming out. And if my Twitter feed is any indication, Jay, so are you.
Sorry, so am I what?
Excited about a lot of the stuff that's coming out.
I'm excited in that, yeah, I am. Yep.
Like you had, so the Commander product this time is monocolor.
For a long time,
it's been multicolor.
Yeah. Which is nice.
Your cube, you've already gone on record to say that you don't really like the multicolor.
No, like at first there were so many multicolor because multicolor spells just inherently are generally more powerful because that's how they upcost them. So, like, if you think drawing 3 cards for 1 mana is too good, then you make it cost more. Well, you can make it cost normally when I say that to someone, they'll say, "Oh, yeah, make it cost 5." But another way that you could do that is you could make it cost 3 but make it three different colors of mana, which is, in theory, just as difficult. So at first, I had a bunch of, like, so many multicolored cards in there. Because they're the most fun and they're the most powerful, and to a lot of people, they're the most fun cards that bring something back. They bring a memory back, or they a time that you, or a what if, or a corner, or like a something. But in practice, there can be a lot of feel bads because nine times out of ten, you know, you don't get to play all your sweet multicolored shit because you're mana fucked. Or you don't get to draft all your mana fixing because everyone's trying to draft it. Or, you know what I mean? Things like, or you have to draft mana fixing instead of drafting like a really cool monocolored creature, like, say, like Consecrated Sphinx. You know, maybe you're like, oh, I'm playing Jeskai, which is American control, and, or not control, but American colors. And I know that because of which Abzan is this.com? Is that?
What Abzan? Uh-huh.
What Abzan is this.com? And. You know, Consecrated Sphinx fits right in there, and it's so great, but I have to take this fucking dual land. How boring is that? So, I'm actually quite excited that it's monocolored. Long story short.
So, what are the major standouts for you? Like, so obviously the five Planeswalkers have finally been revealed. There is no Sarah Planeswalker.
Right.
I have not really heard from Heather all day. I'm hoping she hasn't cut herself.
Yeah, it's actually Witch Abzan. You're right, Jay. Sorry.
Oh my god. Yeah, all the Planeswalkers have been spoiled, and I think that's pretty cool. Almost all of them are cool. I mean, some of them are better than others, obviously, and some of them are better for different reasons than others as well. But, I mean, as obviously, as everybody knows, or for those of you that are just joining us, I'm, like, mainly a cube guy right now. So a lot of these probably aren't good enough for cube. Like, the green one definitely isn't. 5 mana to make a Llanowar Elf. I mean, it protects herself with a blocker, and it goes up to 5 loyalty, this Frailes.
Yep.
But it costs 5 mana. Like, 5 mana for a Llanowar Elf, or 5 mana for, like, to destroy an artifact or enchantment. And it's a -2. It's not a -1. Like, that's so... that just seems so underpowered to me. And then her ultimate is... should win you the game, and I feel like it's not a win you the game ultimate.
Yep.
I like Dereti. Is that the guy's name?
Dereti. Dereti. With T's, yeah.
Yeah, with T's. Oh, yeah, it is. Why does everybody call him Dereti?
Well, no, there is a Dereti. He's the bird bant guy.
Oh, yeah, okay. So Dereti is the red guy, and I think he's actually pretty cool. You discard up to 2 cards, and you draw that many cards.
And that takes him from 4 to 5 loyalty, or from 3 to 5 loyalty.
So that's I think that's a good plus ability.
But I think the fact that he costs 1 red and 3 is the real attractive piece.
I think that's really attractive, and it's funny because all the other Planeswalkers are double costed.
Yeah.
And again, that's where we're talking about costing things differently. Is this guy not powerful enough at 2 red-red instead of 3 red?
Right.
And that's something definitely that I think Wizards probably tested. And then his minus ability is basically Goblin Welder, so sack an artifact and then get an artifact from your graveyard to the battlefield. Now, because of, Jeremy, maybe you can answer me this, because of the way that this is worded, can you sack and get back the same artifact?
Sacrifice an artifact. If you do, return target artifact card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
There's a period after sacrifice an artifact.
Yeah, there is a period after that, but it's not part of the cost.
So you still need a target to do the ability in itself?
Yes, I think so.
So because it says if you do. So what happens if you don't have a target to remove? Well, but no, the thing is,
but yeah, like that's the thing is, I don't think you can put the ability on the stack if you don't have the target. I'm not 100% sure on this. I'd have to look into it. But my understanding, like why it has that if you do clause. Is if you don't have an artifact, because the ability does not require you to sacrifice an artifact as part of the cost.
Right.
The cost is just the -2 loyalty.
Yeah. Or if somebody kills it in response.
Well,
because it says if you sacrifice it. So if you go, I'm going to sacrifice my Soul Ring to get my Batter Skull.
Well, no, you don't announce what you're sacrificing at that point.
What's that? Sorry.
You don't announce what you're sacrificing at that point.
No. When
the ability resolves, then you sacrifice an artifact.
Yeah.
So if you have 5 artifacts and they blow up the Soul Ring that you intended to do, you can choose something else.
A different one. But I meant, sorry, what I meant is, yeah, so you activate your minus two, and then I say, okay, naturalize your artifact. And if you don't have another artifact, or you don't want to sacrifice the artifact because it's a worse choice, then you – do you still have to sacrifice an artifact because
you still have to sacrifice an artifact. So you have to sacrifice
an artifact. Holy shit.
If you have zero artifacts at that point, then if you have zero artifacts at that point, then you don't get to do the welder ability.
Right.
But you still have to have the target in your graveyard.
Interesting. Okay. So,
if a guy has one artifact and he does this ability and you blow away that artifact, then like you've negated that effect. If he's got a crappy artifact and a really good artifact that he doesn't want to get rid of and you blow away the crappy one, then you get both.
Yeah, right.
But he gets to bring something back.
Right.
And but the target's already been chosen, so he can't choose like whatever you blew up.
Yeah, interesting. So. Okay. And then, so that's his minus two. Sack an artifact, get an artifact. And then his ultimate, again, it just doesn't feel so great. It's minus 10, first of all. So that takes 5, 7, 9.
I feel like it's really high.
Fuck, it takes 5 turns to get there without any outside interference.
Yeah.
And then you get an emblem that just says, whenever an artifact goes to your graveyard from the battlefield, return it at the beginning of the next end step. So I don't know why that is. I'm sure it's to stop combos.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so many artifacts.
It's also ridiculously powered, and, like, this is one of those planeswalkers that you're never going to minus 10.
No. His he might as well not have an ultimate.
Yeah, like, his minus 2 is his, like...
Yeah.
His plus 2 is great, but his minus 2 is, like, the sick thing.
You could put him in a proliferate deck. Come on, now.
That's true. But what I think what Jeremy's saying, though, is, like, why would you ever want this emblem? I don't know.
I think if you have this emblem in
the deck that you're playing him in, he is very, very powerful.
Yeah, in this deck, don't forget, I mean, Wyrmcoil Engine's being reprinted in the red deck, right?
Which I think is so awesome that they're actually making, like, Commander super awesome as the precons. So then Obnixilus, who you'll remember from Zendikar and then who came back in M15.
Who was a Planeswalker and then lost his spark.
Lost his spark, and then... So this is either in
this
the
is
past.
Him. This is before. This is all
yeah,
in the
this
past.
Yeah, this is in the past, I guess. So he has kind of a boring plus ability. So he also has three loyalty. He's a 5-cost double black planeswalker. His plus 2 is everybody loses 1 life and you gain that much life. That's kind of shitty.
Like, it's good in a group game. If it's a 4-player game, then, like, that's decent.
It's decent, I guess. But, I mean, I don't know. And then his minus 2 is you get a 5/5 black dragon. Demon. Who flies, but you lose 2 life. And again, like, that just seems.
That's really good.
The lose 2 life doesn't mean shit in Commander.
Well, no, like, and that's what I mean. The lose 2 life, it just seems like that's something they just tacked on to the ability because it was too powerful if you left it like that, but you couldn't make it minus 3 because then you're paying 5 mana for a 5/5 flyer. So you're like, well, how can we rectify this? Well, we need to increase the cost. And again, it brings me back earlier to how we were talking about increasing costs. One way that you can do that is add alternative costs, like as an additional cost to doing something, do X. And I feel like that's what they did here. Like, that just... who cares about 2 life, A, in Commander, and B, it doesn't fit at all. You're getting a 5/5 for 2. It should be 5 life, or it should be... You know what I mean? Like, it's weird. And then his ultimate is minus 8, and you get an emblem with sack a creature, gain life, and draw cards equal to the creature's power.
It's all upside.
Which is great. That's a great emblem to have, actually. Especially in black.
Yep.
And then, I don't know why I'm reading all of these. But anyway.
You're giving good assessment as you're doing it, so keep it up.
Okay, great. And then Teferi was the first one that was spoiled, and I was super excited for this guy, but now I feel like maybe I'm not so excited. 6 mana, 5 loyalty, which is a lot. Plus 1, so on turn 6, you play him for 6, he has 6 loyalty. That's a good ratio to cost, but he doesn't protect himself. Sort of. His plus 1 is look at the top 2 cards, 1 in hand, 1 on the bottom. So already he's limiting himself in usefulness because there's almost nothing that interacts with the bottom of your library, but there's a lot of things that interact with your graveyard. So sure. I feel like maybe this ability started out as hand and graveyard, but in a lot of decks that just equated to plus 1, draw 2 cards, which is way too powerful.
It also flavorfully like, I hate to play the Vorthos guy here, but flavorfully it fits because he's a time mage. Right? Oh, okay. So you're looking at it and you go, okay, well, he's going to manipulate your fate and he's going to delay part of your destiny and speed up another one.
Sure, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, great. Like, this guy is very flavor rich.
Great point. Yeah. Great point. That's a great point. Okay, great. His and minus
like,
one.
Even like the losing life on Obi Nix list, like the losing life on making the demon, that's just flavorly black. Like, that is.
Yeah, no, absolutely it is. I just feel like there's a couple of different flavors they could have gone with, or they could have increased that cost to make it. Like, a little bit more. Like, this just seems like a lazy end-of-development tack, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
His minus one is interesting, because he starts at 5. His minus one is untap 4 permanents.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm thinking of a world that I live in where, like, it's very easy for me to get this guy out early with things like Mana Vault, Mana Crypt, Soul Ring. Again, Cube, remember, people.
Yeah.
Grim Monolith. Even just ramp decks. And then, and like Garrick does this, right? Untap 2 lands. There's a lot of times where you maybe play a Garrick and you have a bounce land or you have a something and you untap your lands and play another. So now this turn you have a threat and a Garrick. And then next turn you make beasts. Well,
I'm pretty sure that's how this guy defends himself. Yeah, he's going to untap your 4 permanents and let you do something else.
So I play Teferi with a Grim Monolith and 2 lands, let's say. And then, or like a Mana Vault and 3 lands, or something to that effect. And instead of being hindered by the fact that they don't untap, I can just untap them and then play another fucking threat.
Yeah,
I can.
Yeah,
play
like that's how he protects himself.
Yeah,
because
in the
a blue
same
mage
turn,
with untapped mana and cards in hand is a very frightening thing.
Like in the same turn, I can play Teferi and Consecrated Sphinx, or Teferi and Clone, or Teferi and like a bunch of crazy blue shit.
Clever Impersonator, even.
Yeah, yeah.
Teferi and
play,
Boomerang.
Or I can play Teferi. Yeah, Teferi, untap, Boomerang your bounce land, hold up Mana Leak, go. Fucking kill yourself. Die tonight. You're dead. yeah. So that ability is so potentially fucking broken.
I think based on that, like, because the permanence, it's like any permanence, like,
yeah,
Teferi could very easily make your cube. And,
oh,
and I
yes.
think out of all of them, like, he is absolutely the number one cube contender.
Yeah.
Like, because if you ever build him into this deck, like, the ultimate is dumb too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and then, okay, so then his ultimate is you may activate loyalty abilities of planeswalkers you control on both, on any player's turn, as if they were instants. So again, and that's a minus 10. So that takes 6 turns to get to. 5 of activations of his plus one. And then you still have to activate it on the 6th turn. And I feel like the argument there is, with no outside interference, proliferate, double season, whatever, with no outside interference, that's again, another minus 10 ability that you'll probably never play.
Correct.
Because if you have planeswalkers, that it's worth it for you to be able to activate them effectively twice a turn for that long. Like, you should, if Teferi lives that long, you should just win. Like, you've looked through now 10 extra cards without any other help from blue, right? So, and your opponent, you've effectively stopped him from killing the Teferi. So you should be winning, right?
Yeah. Like,
but again, if you made this ability cost any less, that would be stupid.
Wait, if you make him as a creature cost any less, or as a planeswalker cost any less, like, this guy is like...
Right.
This guy could be playable in like Legacy.
I think that they built that, like, the numbers here: 6 casting cost, 10 ultimate, and 5 starting loyalty, 100% available for casual Legacy. Because you, like, tap 5 for doubling season, untap Gem Teferi and Emblem. Like, now what?
Well, that's what I was going to mention. I was going to say it's very pertinent that he is a 5 loyalty, 10 ultimate guy, because in EDH, in casual kitchen table Magic, and in some cubes, that is a viable strategy.
Yep.
So I can't imagine Brian Zemba, who plays 5 color control every time we cube because it's the best deck, just like it is in cons, just untapping and just Teferi ultimate go. And I don't know what the fuck I would do. That would suck so fucking bad. I can't even fucking imagine that. So there's, Teferi is easily, of the 3 we've talked about, Teferi is easily 4. The best one so far. Yeah. Omnixilis might make it in, but there's so few black planeswalkers in the cube already because a lot of them just aren't good enough. Like, Sorin isn't even in my cube, again, because they overcosted him by making him have three black mana symbols in his cost. His six cost doesn't matter. It's the fact that it's triple black. He can't be played in literally anything but mono black.
Yeah.
You know?
Teferi, the fact that that minus one exists, like, I don't think there's a blue card that hasn't been broken some way that has the word on tap on it.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah.
Like, this ability alone, like, I could see him being played in Legacy Mud. I could see him being played in Vintage Mud. Like, the six mana cost might be worth getting that minus one ability, because that minus one ability does some ridiculous shit.
Yeah, I don't know anything about those formats except for that six mana seems too expensive, but because I don't know anything, I'm not sure if it would
like,
be
that's the thing.
You know
any
what?
Format
you know what,
where
man?
You can play Mana Vault or...
A Lotus gives you three, buddy.
So... Yeah, that's exactly right. Lotus, Mox, Crypt, turn one to Fairy, go.
Yep.
Yeah, and untap. At that point there, you're untapping with three mana open. Like, yeah. It's like...
Holy shit.
Yeah, like...
Counterspell and Swords of Plowshares. Jeez, my ass, your Christ. Face. Yeah,
yeah, that, okay, or like, you're doing like a, you know, like the... You're manipulating the top of your deck, but
untap four things. One of them, no, untap four things, and then you just like play Time Walk, untap Time Vault, Teferi, untap four things, kill you. Like,
yeah,
this
exactly.
Is so
you Vault Lock him.
Yeah,
maybe you cast Tangle Wire, and it's like, okay, I'll untap all the important stuff because I can do that.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to get flack from some Legacy player who thinks that we're just all Jobins here, but that sounds amazing.
Sounds like fun.
If people are playing Ral Zarek,
yeah,
in Legacy or in Vintage...
He only costs four.
Yeah, he only costs four, but
he
only
untaps one thing.
He only untaps one thing.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So, fair. Like, that's where it's like, he's on the watch because... Someone might get creative. Like, someone could be ambitious, and he's good enough to pay off every now and then, whether or not he deserves to be. Like, you know, he might be the broken clock that's right twice a day.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. For sure, he is costed the way he is, because if he wasn't, he would be format warping in more than just EDH.
I agree. And I think, I think the number one point that you made, Jared, was that any blue card that's ever used the word untap on it is fucking broken. And I think that's like, that's a really good way to sum it up.
And like, that's the thing. I have done ridiculous shit with a Twiddle. So don't be saying Twiddle ain't the card, because Twiddle has done some fucked up shit in its time.
So, Jay, I gotta ask, how do you feel about Misty? Because Misty's back. She was spoiled today.
I was gonna go to that next. So, Nahiri, the Lithomancer. I thought it was really cool. I looked at it and I was like, oh, it's Stoneforge Mystic. That's pretty fucking sweet. And then everyone was like, no, it isn't. And I was like, holy shit. Okay.
I love that they made Stoneforge Mystic
into a planeswalker. I think it's really cool. First of all, the way that I've been told, I don't know what a Lithomancer is, first of all. Second of all, I've been told that she's not Stoneforge Mystic.
That's correct.
Stoneforge Mystic is like a occupation of the core. Which, and when I say core, I mean the race, not the Marines or the center of something. It's a job. She's a shaman. Like, she's not...
She's an artificer.
Yeah, she's not the Stoneforge Mystic. Because everyone was like, well, why, if she's Nahiri the Lithomancer, why wasn't Stoneforge Mystic a legendary card? And hey, while we're on the subject of that, like, wouldn't that have made Stoneforge Mystic a little bit more fair back in the day? But that's how they've kind of explained it, I guess, or somebody has explained it, is that she's just this version of her, Nahiri, is just the Stoneforge Mystic at the time.
Yeah, like if you were to... Oh, sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
If you were to be a core guy who's like, you know what, I need a Stoneforge Mystic to make some artifacts for me, to make some weapons for me, this is the one you're calling. Like, she's the Stoneforge Mystic. Yeah.
But when she dies, somebody else is the Stoneforge.
Oh, no, there's plenty of Stoneforge Mystics. It's just, this is the one. Like, this is the one you go
with. And this particular one also happened to possess a Planeswalker Spark.
Yeah. And I think it's very cool. And then I didn't read the article, because I don't read Magic articles, especially on the mothership. But I saw a picture in an article that somebody linked me to that I didn't read, where it's showing all the Eldrazi getting locked up, and Nissa... And Jason Sorin are there with now Nahiri?
No.
Locking them up?
No, it wasn't Jason Sorin.
Who was it? It was Sorin?
It was Sorin and Ugin.
Soren and Ugin. And there was a third Planeswalker.
Right, Ugin was the third Planeswalker.
Right, right.
Oh.
And then, and I thought that was pretty cool. So I think it's cool. I think the art could be a little better in the background. Because I think that it's the her is very cool. Also, I would love to get this altered. She is the perfect art to get altered. Like,
yeah, she
get,
is. She's like really dance, alterable.
Like, get like Dance God or fucking like a superhero type alter, or like who did Steve Argyle? Get him to do something. Like those guys do. Like, not that I'm not.
But
saying
what would you? Whoever. What would you alter? Like, would you put? Would you I put would the fucking it, like? Wouldn't you put the Dragonzord dagger in her hand?
I don't know what that is.
From Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the little fucking the Green Ranger dagger that makes her and see him holding it to her head.
Yeah, or I would make her like a Jedi.
Nice.
Like that's the perfect lightsaber. Yeah, she's Jedi. And it's flavored for me because I have all my swords altered to look like lightsabers.
Nice.
And I had Chris Ron change the name from Sword of XYZ to Lightsaber of XYZ.
Nice.
So I would definitely get her to do that instead. But I think the background, like I feel like it's not showing what is that glowing rock? It's not in the shape of a sword anymore. But at the same time, you don't want to just have the exact same art as Stoneforge Mystic.
Well, I like having all like the Eldrazi, like I like having all the what did they call those things?
Hedrons.
The Hedrons. Yeah. I like that she's back there. Like maybe that. She's the one that. Who found...
So, if you read the story...
She's the rock person.
If you read the story... Okay, because I did read the article, because I do read everything.
Right.
So, it was her job to craft all of the Hedrons on Zendikar. So, she took 40 years or whatever the hell the time frame...
Fuck.
It was a long time. And she built... So the Eldrazi were not always on Zendikar.
No.
Okay.
So they traverse the great.
So she was on another plane. She was with Soren, and she saw the Eldrazi, and then they retreated to Zendikar because Zendikar is her home plane or her safe plane or whatever. And they decided, okay, well, we're going to need a world. Ugin met them there, and he's like, okay, well, we're going to need to trap them somewhere. I think this is how we do it. They're native to the Blind Eternities, which is where the planeswalkers go in between their planes, and the only way to do it is to trap them in their physical bodies, and we need a plane that will sacrifice itself to do it. Or that we need to risk a plane. And so they decided that was going to be the one. So her job was to build all of these Hedrons, and then Ugin went through and, like, inscribed them all with, like, runes and shit. And then, and whatever Soren's job was, I guess just sitting there and drink people dry, whatever.
Sweet.
Just being fucking Soren. Yeah. So they got them all together, and then the idea was that they then like charged them up with energy, and they lured the Eldrazi, and then they trapped them in the Eye of Ugin.
Okay.
So she built all of those things, and in the story they talk about how, you know, she's going to help a core, like one of her core members comes in, and they're trying to fight against whatever, and she reaches into a stone and pulls out a sword to give her.
Ah.
And that's exactly what she's done there.
Yeah,
she's reached into
that
rock and just pulled out that sword.
That makes a lot more sense. That's pretty sweet.
Which also then fits the whole, like, ultimate. We haven't even talked about her abilities yet. She's another, like, white-white 3-for-3. And her +2 is put a 1/1 white core soldier creature token onto the battlefield.
Which is a little bit meh, but...
So she goes to 5, but... You then may attach an equipment you control to it for free.
Not only does she go up to 5, which is a pretty hefty, she also protects herself with a blocker, which is pretty good.
And then makes the blocker not suck.
+2 is like, draw 2 cards if you got the right equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fucking great.
Okay. Then her -2 is very much like Stoneforge, except a little bit enhanced. So you may put an equipment card from your hand... or graveyard onto the battlefield.
Very good.
So you get that extra little bit of versatility.
And how bad do you feel sitting across from this, and they're like, yeah, play Nahiri, +2, attach the sword, go. And then you're like, yeah, end of turn, fucking naturalize your sword, holy shit. Or like attackers, oh, naturalize your sword. And then she's like, whatever, fucking -2, that shit.
Yeah.
And you're just like, fuck.
And God then damn. The -10, of course, put a colorless equipment artifact token named Stoneforged Blade onto the battlefield. It has indestructible. An equipped creature gets +5/+5 and has double strike, and equip 0.
So until you said it has indestructible, I didn't realize that it said that, and I was going to say, this is an amazing ability, except for I wish that it had indestructible. But no, it does. They it did does. It right. Great job.
Yeah.
What the fuck? That's the only ultimate ability other than Teferi's that I would even consider using, probably. And it's, I think it's the best one. It's unconditional. It's amazing. It's fairly costed, I think. She's fair. Like, I just feel like, I feel in the whole package of the whole card, I feel like it's the best one to get to. It's the best one to finish the game with. And flavorfully, it's great. And it's just great. And it's great. And I think
it's also better because the way to get there is better.
That's what I mean. Like, it's the best ultimate to get to. Yeah. Like, Sorin's ultimate is very good, but, like, you're draining somebody for one, or you're draining
you're
a
not,
table.
You're not affecting the board state at all.
Yeah, it's fucking garbage. And then Teferi's is good, but again, like, you can brick with that, and he doesn't protect himself. Like, he goes up to six, but, I mean, that doesn't help him get to his ultimate quickly, whereas this at least is a blocker. They have to have a flyer or direct damage or kill your blocker. So you're still getting a card out of it, whereas like with Teferi's, you're not generally getting a card out of it. And then you can just get an equipment back, which is great because you're playing equipment that helps you end the game. All of her abilities help you end the game, and that's what you want. You want abilities that end the game. Yes, whereas, again, Obnixilis, his minus two is great. I would be happy to play him for five, get a 5/5 flyer, say go. If you kill my flyer, I still have Obnixilis. If you kill my Obnixilis, I still have my flyer. Like, those are both good for me. But, you know, Obnixilis has a shitty plus, you know?
In cube, a terrible plus.
Yeah, and it's like with Duretti, Duretti solely exists. He doesn't care about his ultimate. He solely exists. No. You plus two just to minus two.
Even then, just having a red draw two cards, like, there are so many situations I can think of where you just need to find that card to kill your opponent. A Haste Guy.
Faithless Looting is a great
burn
thing.
Spell. Yeah, you just get the Faithless Looting every turn and have still a fucking guy. This is like what Tybalt should have been. So, I think Nahiri's great. Personally, I think
Tybalt was better dressed.
Fuck Sarah. Who even cares about that? I don't even give a shit. Fuck that shit. This is a great card, and I love it. So, there's that.
Sweet.
Yeah, and you know, to play devil's advocate of something that I said earlier, because I did mention that I love how crazy EDH is getting now with the precons, because I felt like the last... Have they done two of these now?
They've done two so far. This is the third batch.
Yeah.
Already a year ago that fucking True Name Nemesis came out?
Yeah.
My God. I'm old. So I think it's great now that the decks, like, because pre-made decks have always had the problem where they're like the perfect tool to make money, which, again, is not a problem for Hasbro, but, like, where they're good enough that shitty people at Magic, like the casual people that are bad at Magic, which is, I'm not putting them down. I'm just saying they're bad. competitively, right? Like, they are. That's how it works. They love those products because they're cool, and they get them into new formats they'd never heard before, and they're relatively inexpensive, and now you're getting some cards in there that are worth some money, so you can even, if you don't even care about True Name Nemesis, because it's one card out of 100 and who even gives a fuck, you can just sell that for $50 and, yo, you got your deck for free. But the problem that I've always had with them is that they're a couple of really powerful cards with a bunch of, like, really just shitty garbage cards. And I'm sure that these decks will have shitty garbage cards in them, but from the spoilers I've seen so far, it looks like they're trying to make them a little bit more well-rounded and kind of be able to survive in the current meta that is EDH or Commander.
I would be very interested to see how big the teams are that are working on the Commander product versus how big they used to be.
Right. Now, the devil's advocate that I was going to mention before, the thing that I don't like, or that some people don't like, and that they're kind of convincing me about that, is that it's one of the big reasons why I don't play EDH anymore, is that it stifles creativity in that you're now playing a game of strictly better. Like, why play X when you could play Y? And in yeah. every situation, Y is always better. And I find, like, they're starting to make cards like that where the cards are very good. And so now every deck that is playing blue, whether or not Teferi is the commander, Teferi's in the deck, and Teferi wins you the game. Like, similar to Primeval Titan, Consecrated Sphinx, whatever else they've banned in the past. And not necessarily on just because they're powerful and win you the game, but because of the game, like the game states revolving around them. And that's what I mean when I talk about things like warping the format and stuff. Yeah. And that was a big thing with EDH. Like, I loved playing EDH when it was fairly underground, not to sound too hipsterish, but mainly because it was still different every single time you played it. Every time. And you were still getting just fucking Battlecruiser Magic'd. Like ranch sauce. Like, guy plays a fucking Primeval Titan on turn two, or like fucking combos off with some weird red Goblin Storm deck, or is playing yeah. a 99 Mountain Ashling deck, and you're like, what the fuck? And then he kills you, and you're like, what the fuck? So just like, but now it's like, and then it kind of creeped into people are now actually net decking EDH lists. And so I'm just a little bit bored with it, but I'm doing it too, so now I'm just ranching people. And then I started doing, as people will remember from 3 years ago or 2 years ago on the podcast, I started doing EDH for achievements. So that was super fun because, again, it's like PlayStation. You could play the game and just play the game and win, or you could try to collect all the fucking crystal shard pieces.
Chibis.
Yeah, yeah. And that was fun for a little bit until people, and I will admit that I was the almost, if not the worst offender of this, until people started just making like achievement hunter decks, like solely for achievement hunting. And so here is the most grievous thing I ever did. I know all the achievements. I helped make a bunch of them. I played all the time. I copied them from some people and like made some on my own, and then tried to make my own EDH league on weekends for points and prizes. There was an achievement that was based on white bordered permanents. You had to have a certain number of those. There was an achievement based on card like lands with the same picture, and then there was an achievement based on cards in play with the same artist. So, you know, you have maybe Chris Ron or Dan Scott or Raymond Swanland, who have done a lot of really great cards that you could have together, right? So the easiest way to get all three of those achievements was to have all of the same basic lands in your fucking deck that were also from 7th edition and white bordered. And again, because I played monocolored EDH decks, it was super easy for me to do that. So we'd sit down, and again, what am I playing mostly? A green ramp deck. So on turn three, I have 7 white-bordered basic lands that all have the same picture who are all drawn by the same guy. Guess I'll take all the packs. See you later, fuckos. So that was a little annoying for everybody and me. And basically the game like devolved into win all the packs and then play EDH. But because some of us didn't make decks really to play EDH, I mean, we could play and win still with guys and kill people because some of the achievements made you have to do that. But we weren't really interested in that. We were just like, yeah, whatever. There's no packs left. We're playing for fun. Yeah, okay, I scoop. You win. I guess we'll just go pay another $5 and get 8 more packs and so I can win them. Okay, great. Let's do that. So, long story short, I think it's great. All these new cards are super cool. But I find that since they've started developing cards specifically for EDH in all sets, including EDH precons, I find it can stagnate the format a little bit. Because, you know, why would you not play these cards? These cards are bonkers. And, I mean, hearing Scotty, for example, maybe you can talk a little bit more to this, but hearing you talk about EDH with people, it sounds like in recent times, the only EDH generals I ever hear about are the new ones that they've made in pre-con.
I don't know.
Okay.
No, I don't think that's necessarily true.
It might not be. I just find like nobody's talking. Like I remember like Teneb being like the dirtiest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anybody talk about Zneb in forever, or Xur the Enchanter, or, you know what I mean? I find, like, people are playing a lot of the new commanders.
There is the Banthus, which kind of affects some of that stuff, because once you legitimize something, people try to follow it.
Sorry, what did you say, sorry?
Like, there is a ban list that people try to follow, so that kind of legitimizes it, so you see some of that cut off. But one of the points that you're making, in like a way that I kind of envision it in my head, is that in old EDH, like back when it was called EDH, you were using a series of cards, a giant card pool full of cards that were not designed to do what you're doing.
Yes.
So you were always having, everything was a bandage. Everything was a bandage, in a sense.
Yeah.
And now with these commander decks, you actually have a design space where people are designing cards for that exact purpose.
Yeah, which is great, because they're designing it.
It has a benefit because, A, you give your designers the ability to start, like, it gives them a canvas, it gives them a sandbox to do some interesting things.
And it gives me better cards.
But that's the other thing, is it gives you better cards, and giving you better cards takes some of the creativity out of EDH, because now you have the card that fills that specific hole. Yeah. You used to have five different ways to fill that hole, because you had all of these, like, not perfect patches, but now you have this is the EDH card that deals with my permanents being stolen.
Yeah, like, a really good example of what I'm trying to say, just in case I'm not being super clear, because that happens quite often, in case not only Jeremy doesn't understand, is this lieutenant, this lieutenant mechanic. I think that's so fucking cool, flavor-wise. That's, like, the fucking coolest thing ever. You took an ability, you took a format that's about having a general command an army and attack, and it's flavorful in that there's only one of every card because there's only one of every person. You know, if I'm commanding an army of Jeffreys, then I can have infinite. I could have the Stormtrooper army because they're all clones, but they're not all clones. You have to have this angel and that angel and this goblin and that goblin and work together, and that's so cool. So now you're taking generals, and oh man, this fucking Storm Surge Kraken has gotten promoted because of his prowess in battle to my lieutenant. And when I'm around the general, when I'm on the field, inspiring my troops, they get a bonus. How fucking cool is that? The problem with that is that there's no reason to never play these creatures in your deck. In every EDH deck that I would ever make, that I could ever think of making, I would put these creatures in it.
Yeah, and like that's exactly it. Is one, you get to do something really awesome, but now you have that card. You have that piece.
So now, instead of building a 100-card deck, I'm now building a 98-card deck because I've already got two of my cards every time.
Yeah.
And so that's the only thing that that people kind of don't like, and that they're kind of swaying me on, is I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like if they made a Cultivate / Kodama's Reach, because they're the same card, that cost 2 mana instead of 3 mana, I wouldn't stop playing those 3 mana cards in a ramp deck.
So you're done playing all of your 2-mana ones.
I absolutely would play the 2-mana one. And if I had to cut card, well, I might cut one of the 3-mana ones.
Of course.
Because it's strictly better. Yep. So I feel like any creature that I play is strictly worse in almost every situation than my lieutenant is. And if it's not strictly worse, it's at least probably on par. Out of 99 cards, I probably am going to want my lieutenant. Like, there's no drawback to them. Like, it's not like they cost 8 mana to get this lieutenant ability. Like, fuck, the most expensive one is a 5/5 flying haste dragon for 7 mana. That's the most expensive lieutenant we've seen so far, because we haven't seen the green one.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe the green one is a billion mana because green ramps. But then it would, I mean, I feel like it would still have a great ability. Like, these all have great abilities. So, that's the only thing I don't like about the new commander stuff, to answer kind of your question from an hour ago, Scotty. But like, some of this stuff is so cool. Like,
Reform.
What's that?
Reform.
Reform. Is that a card?
So awesome, yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, three colorless, one blue. It's a creature worm. It's a 0-1.
Oh, yes.
Reef worm. Yes, I thought a reform. I heard reform, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Reef worm.
Reform is so fucking cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's good, but how fucking cool is that card?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an 0-1 that turns into a 3-3 that then turns into a 6-6 that turns into a 9-9?
I want to get an altar of it that all it is come at me, bro.
Yeah.
Like, that's all just written on it.
That's fucking super cool. The thing I like about it, too, is they seem... because I don't read, so maybe Scotty knows the answer to this question. But they seem to be going from a bunch of different eras of Magic, like M15 was. So they have, like, Jazal Goldmane, who I believe died in the book? Or something? It's a Johnny Goldmane's brother.
Yeah, he died.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he died because he has the same axe that a Johnny has, and a Johnny's going on his like whole "I hate the world and I'm vengeant" quest because his brother is dead. So
that's
anyway,
correct. Yeah.
So they have Jazal, who's like, I don't want to waste too much time talking about him because I've been talking for so long about so many cards. He is like, he's a great card though. Anyway, but they have Jazal Goldmane, who's in this picture alive. It is a white card. It has the axe. He's doing legendary cat warrior things. Then turn around, they have Stitcher Giralf from presumably
Innistrad.
Yeah, and his sister.
That's his sister.
We call her Jissa.
Is that his sister?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were this brother sister combo that was in all of the lore, that was in all of the Vorthos stuff. About like the sister could really summon the dead, and the brother had to stitch them back together, and they both had
even in her flavor text, it says the first word is Giralf. Must you always whine? Look at that. Okay. But then, fucking go back in time again to Felden from
Felden's Cane fame.
You'll remember Felden's Cane from when you were a baby? Yeah. How fucking cool is that? And Titania, who I only remember from one other card called Priest of Titania.
Titania's song predates even that.
Sure, sure. That's from infinite time ago. So,
just core sets, like base sets. Yeah.
Like from, like, yeah, revised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or earlier,
That stuff's fucking cool. I think that's very fun. That's very cool. Yeah.
And that's fun things they can do with design.
Yeah, yeah. Because, and I like that, because there's no restriction on that. Like EDH should be a little bit flavorful. I think they've hit it out of the park with the flavor so far. We've talked about that. But it doesn't have to be cohesive flavorness.
Oh, no.
You know? You have felt
this is like an all-star team.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's fucking Space Jam.
Yeah, this is motherfucking Space Jam.
Yeah. So I think it's cool. Like, I really like this. I don't know if I'll buy any of them. A, because I feel like I'll never be able to find them at MSRP, just based on things that... Like, based on this
you
happening.
You really have to get to know your local Toys R Us. And that's the thing, is that I think it's only going to be tough to find the one that has the best playable card.
Yeah, probably.
If they make another True Name Nemesis type card, then that one's going to be tough to find.
But yeah, I think it's cool. Like it appears that they've brought back all the medallions. I mean, they've only spoiled the black one.
But it's pretty intuitive they're all going to be there.
And those are expensive cards right now because they were never reprinted and they're from like Tempest or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those are good cards. I think those are great cards to have in your commander deck. I like Masterwork of Ingenuity. It's a one mana artifact.
That thing's insanely busted.
And you can, it's just copy artifact, but instead of copy artifact, it's copy equipment. For one mana.
And by the way, this is not to be overlooked. It itself is an equipment.
Yeah.
Which means it is searchable by all of those traditional means.
Yeah.
Stoneforge Mystic, I'm looking at you. I'm pretty sure that this could easily be.
How fucking stupid is that?
Like legacy tech, man, I'm telling you.
Yep.
And I have to tell you, from the commander's standpoint, the two cards that I'm, like, rock hard over are Unstable Obelisk and Commander's Sphere. Okay? Commander's standpoint. I'm not looking at these for any other formats. Like, just isolated in Commander.
Yep.
Unstable Obelisk is 3 colorless mana for an uncommon artifact. And it says, tap to add 1 to your mana pool. Fine. That's fairly common. But 3 mana Mind Stones are a thing.
Tap 1 of any color of your commander.
I'm getting to that one. That's the devil one. This unstable obelisk taps for a colorless.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then it also has an ability that says 7 and tap, sack the unstable obelisk, destroy target permanent, not target non-land permanent, fucking vindicate. Granted, it's 7 mana.
It's 7.
But it's in any color.
But it's in any color, and it's a mana rock, which you can just blow up later for utility. I think from a design space, this is insane.
Yeah, I probably won't, but I was going to say, I wonder if that'll be in every single one.
It could be.
Like, because they do that in all of them, don't they? Don't they have cards?
Yeah, like they had Sol Ring in all of them.
Yeah.
You know, like they do that.
But they I like Tower and all of them. I think you're right. I don't think it's cube playable, but I like it a lot in Commander.
Yeah.
And then the other one that I'm pretty excited about is Commander Sphere, which is the other one. And that's just tap for a mana of any color that your commander can produce, and then just sack it, draw a card. Not sack tap.
Not
you know,
pay mana.
Not pay mana. Just like, ah, fuck it, cash it in. And it's a common. This card's really good in Commander.
Yeah. I really like that card.
I really like where they're heading with that sort of stuff from the design perspective, and trying to, you know, I think they were really needed specifically in this mono color situation, because, you know, you can get away with not providing colors, you know, with means to accomplish things, because you can balance that out with the other colors. Like, granted, black can't kill enchantments. Big fucking deal. It has an unstable obelisk in the deck, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that this was a good opportunity for them to introduce this sort of stuff from the design space, and I quite like it. I think it's good.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot.
How do you feel about pouring Edward 40 hands over here? How do you feel about this guy?
Which one?
Dual caster mage?
Oh, I'm not as excited about him as everybody else is. Mostly because for you to use him on your stuff is really expensive, like at the time. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like double red. Like, Snapcaster's one. Like, so I don't know why he had to cost 2. And then, probably for Legacy, I'm assuming. I just feel like he's a creature of opportunity. Like, conditional opportunity. And I feel like, maybe I'm being unfair to him because I'm only comparing him to Snapcaster Mage, because he's basically Snapcaster Mage. I feel like Snapcaster Mage just had more versatility in that, like, at any situation, you had multiple things that you could do with it, depending on what the situation called for. Whereas this guy is a little bit, like, is not even maybe a little bit, maybe a lot more limited in that the spell has to be on the stack to use his ability.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like it. I think he's a good... I mean, he's definitely going in cube. He would definitely go in any red deck I ever made. I just feel like maybe they made him cost 3 mana, 2 of it being colored, because they were afraid of the implications that Snapcaster Mage already did. In that case, I don't know why he has to cost 3 mana. Why doesn't he just cost red?
Mm-hmm.
But then, isn't Fork banned or something?
No.
Is Fork banned or restricted or used to be for any or anything like that? Didn't it used to have
It used
that?
To be. I think it was on the restricted list at some
maybe,
point.
Maybe, yeah. So maybe that's why. Maybe it's too powerful at just red, but I can't possibly think of a scenario where it is. But I think he's fine. I mean, Snapcaster was also a 2-1, and this guy's a 2-2 for some reason.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what they did.
Well,
maybe they said
they had to make him tougher, I think, to justify.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking they said, you know, Snapcaster was a 2-mana 2-1, and it was too good. So we have to make this guy cost 3. So what can we do to justify that cost? And so they added him 1 toughness. And I don't think that 1 toughness is worth 1 colored mana symbol. If it was a colorless mana symbol, or if he was double red, I think that would be a fair comparison, but I think in this case they erred on the side of caution. They also, this is really only really specific with red mostly, I find, but they made him a human wizard and not a goblin.
Yeah.
And I think that's super relevant.
I think like in a legacy situation where if like you are playing some sort of counterburn strategy, Like, this guy's going to be better in some spots in Snapcaster Mage because you don't have to pay any more mana. Like, he's a 3-mana counterspell if you're being countered.
Yeah, whereas Snapcaster Mage is like a 4-mana, I guess.
Yeah, or you have to have the card in your graveyard. Like, you have to have certain things happening. Whereas, like, this guy's going to fit into different spots. Snapcaster is ultimately way more versatile, but, like, if you build the deck right, like, this guy can do a lot of abusive things.
Yeah.
And he has the body on the board also, so...
And the thing that I really like about him, like, if we were to not overanalyze it into other formats, but in EDH, like, red gets outclassed a whole lot because... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, Scotty, because I used to be really into this, but now I'm not. But red... Generally, its color pie philosophy is quick, small, aggressive things that kill you. But that doesn't translate well to EDH, where you have 40 life, and especially in group games.
So there's a lot that goes into red's color pie that does translate well. So it's things like threat and effects, you know, whether they're individual or en masse.
Yeah.
Big burn spells is obviously a thing.
Like fireballs.
Yeah, but also spell copying is pretty relevant, right?
That's what I mean. This is another one of those. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just imagine playing, like, a red deck, and somebody casts even something, like, as innocuous as, like, Peregrination, like, search for 2 lands and scry one. I would love to do that in red.
Mm-hmm.
Or Doomblade. I would love to do that in red. Just simple little things like that. Do you know what I mean? Divination. Somebody casts a fucking Sphinx's Rev, or, you know, that would be great to be able to do in red.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like him a lot, actually. What about you? What do you like? You're the EDH guy.
So, from an EDH standpoint, I think that Angel of the Dire Hour is pretty sweet. That's a white-white 5 for a 5/4 with flash. It's a creature angel, and it has flying. And when it enters the battlefield, if you cast it from your hand, you exile all attacking creatures. It's like the ultimate rattlesnake card, and I'm pretty excited.
That's pretty good. I feel like because you have to cast it from it your hand for 7, it's a little
it's expensive. Fair, but it is commander, and at that point in time you're basically going to be use it to just like fuck your opponent that's trying to alpha you.
Oh yeah, 3 and or 4 like, or 5 nope. for 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one that I think is really neat is there's like these this way or this cycle of cards, and they're so like Wave of Vitriol and Scrap Mastery, but Wave of Vitriol is the one that I'm really interested in. So this one is 7 mana again, green 5, sorcery. Each player sacrifices all artifacts, enchantments, and non-basic lands he or she controls. For each land sacrificed this way, its controller may search its library for a basic land card and put it on the battlefield tapped. Then each player who searched a library this way shuffles it. This card is fucking crazy ass. Crazy ass.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's sacrifice, by the way, not destroy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It gets around all of the gods, gets around all of the like Darksteel Forge nonsense shenanigans, like
Darksteel, even things like Darksteel Ingot.
Yeah.
Then after a big wrath, you're normally like, well, at least I have one.
Yeah. So anyways, I think this card's pretty neat, and it may actually change the way that people build decks, which I think is good. But like, I expect it's probably going to be a cycle of these. So I'm interested to see what the white and blue and black ones are, because like Scrap Mastery is the same similar effect where each player exiles all artifact cards from his or her graveyard, then sacrifices all artifacts he or she controls, then puts all cards they exiled that way on
like
the battlefield.
Living death.
Yeah, for artifacts.
Living death for artifacts.
So it's almost like we're going to have one of these big sweeping chaotic style cards for each color, and I'm pretty excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Yep. Interesting. I really like another card that I really like is Hollowed Spirit Keeper. 3/2 vigilance for 3 mana. So white 1.
He's got Q written all over him, I think.
Oh yeah. When he dies, you put X spirit flying creatures, 1/1s, onto the battlefield where X is the number of creatures in your graveyard. So when he dies, you automatically get 1. So for 3 mana, you're getting 4 power. And then like how fucking good is this guy in Cube? Like, he's like Moorland Haunt was in Delver days. Like, he is so good. I can't believe how good he is. And
he's super good for like the White Weenie strategy.
I don't know
right?
where he's from. Is he from New Phyrexia? Like, is he a worshiper of Norn or something? Like, look at his fucking art. He's got He only has three fingers, and he's all fucked. And he's fucked, also. Look at him. Look at him all fucked up. That's the only way I can describe this guy. He's just weird. Like, he's not a human. I mean, not only is his art not a human, but, I mean, his type, he's also, like, a avatar. And he's just all weird. Maybe he's, like, from something way back, even, like, Mercadian Masks or something. Who knows? But I think it's just fucking cool. His art is so cool, and the card is just great. I like it.
Like, he could be a Ravnica thing, maybe? Like,
oh, maybe. Yeah.
Like, an Orzhov type thing?
Yeah, he looked kind of like that.
But yeah, he definitely has Q written all over him. Like, a 3-2 for 3 is pretty good, and then the Vigilance is a nice tack on to justify the two white pips,
yep.
And his ability is just really sweet.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's just a great all-around white card. Like,
yep.
And if he was in a regular set, he would be a fucking turbo bomb.
Yep.
Like, if you open this guy in fucking Cons of Tarkir draft, like,
yeah,
you're dead. Yeah, so I like him. Yeah, I like him a lot. So I think this is a really cool commander set so far. And actually, I'm excited for some of the things in Cube. But a lot of it just probably won't make it into Cube. Like, a lot of people were, like, really excited at first glance about, like, say, Felden making it into Cube as a second Kiki-Jiki. But it's, you have to pay mana for his ability, and he doesn't have haste. Whereas Kiki-Jiki has neither of those things. I mean, Kiki-Jiki costs more, but doesn't have those things, so it's difficult to play this guy and then invest mana into him later as well. But yeah. I mean, it's a cool card nonetheless. Flavor, time, we already talked about that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just excited for a lot of these cards. I'm a little sad that all the lieutenants basically probably won't make it into Cube, because a lot of them are pretty good, but they just, you'll never have a commander in Cube, right? So
yeah.
It would be kind of cool to try a version of Cube, not Commander Cube, which is a thing that people do, and if you're interested, if that sounds like something you want to do, you should look it up. It's basically exactly what it sounds like. You draft an EDH deck. But it would be cool to try something like that, where maybe you have, like, a conspiracy that allows you to, like, pick a commander, which just means everything that a commander has. You can only play cards of that color in your deck, and you can cast it over and over again, and it starts the game in the exile zone, and it has to be a creature or, I guess, now a planeswalker. I think that would be, actually, that'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, could be.
If you're drafting Cube and you fucking could pick a fucking commander creature just randomly, but would that be broken? Like, you just pick, like, fucking Goblin Guide every turn? Or every time?
I mean, it might be. You might have to stipulate that it has to be legendary.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So.
Sure. Maybe I'll play around with that. That sounds fun.
Yeah. But yeah, it's pretty sweet. So I'm pretty impressed with the product. I think they'll do a good job, and we'll see how it goes. I would love to see, like, different cubes based around different shit, personally. Like, I think that would be just, like, super sweet. Because, like, we're just so used to, you know, seeing the same sort of stuff. Like, you've got your local stuff, but, you know, I really like the idea of these themed cubes. I think it could be pretty exciting.
Yeah, themed cubes I find are, like, super fun. But I think for them to work, you have to have, you have to have a group willing to play. You have to have lots of people as well, like, basically, for it to not, like, stagnate. But then my big issue with it is that I find that it's kind of like playing an exact 360 cube as well, where they can get boring as a format as a whole, because you're always doing the same every draft. There's always the same things are happening. Like every draft, there's gonna be the reanimator deck, the mono blue deck, the ramp deck, the white weenie deck, and the red deck wins deck, and then maybe something in between, like a five color or something like that.
Sure.
And it can get kind of boring, which is why I have, like, a 600 card cube instead of a 300 card cube, because then at least, you know, you're only seeing half the cube at a time, so different things happen. But I would love it if in my area there was at least either one other person that had a cube that had a different ideal about their cube than me, or like a themed cube. Like, I've heard about a lot of them, like the zombies versus humans, or like, is it zombies versus humans? Or is it just humans versus, I think it's zombies versus humans, like a Walking Dead cube.
Yeah.
Sounded cool, and then there was like the Durfington. Dave has
monocolor cube.
Yeah, the multicolor cube.
Mm-hmm. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Where everything is multicolored. There's not a single monocolored card in it. Stuff like that would be cool. I would really love to, and I've said it before, I think it would be cool to have like a Ravnica, like a combined Ravnica cube.
Yeah, some people have tried that sort of stuff, and I hear they play pretty well too, because like in some cases there's some nice crossover with the abilities.
Yeah.
Like Convoke a suite with tokens,
yeah.
You know, and like that sort of thing. And so yeah, I imagine that could be pretty good too.
Yeah, and like, or like maybe a Khons and like a Lara cube.
Yeah.
Where you have wedges versus shards.
Like, yeah, it could be a thing
might
too.
Be fun, right?
Once, and especially once you get the blocks finished too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And like stuff like that could be fun, right? I just, it's just that takes a lot of dedication and time. Like it's definitely harder. Like I put a lot of time and effort and money into my cube, and it's a theme cube is I think harder. Like,
yeah.
Anybody that does a theme cube, I respect. But I think too, like the interest just has to be there, and in a similar fashion that the interest for a set has to be there, right? It's like you guys want to do the store draft of cons. It's like for the first couple weeks, everybody wants to, but after that, it's like whatever.
Yeah.
You know, people aren't playing cons generally for 3 months unless they're grinding.
Or they're practicing for GPs or shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you mean like as a casual, just like every Sunday, I want to draft, but I don't want to draft cons for three months.
You know what's interesting? The last set that we had where that wasn't an issue was Innistrad.
Sorry, where everybody did want to draft it all the time?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember
Innistrad was great.
That was the one where everybody was drafting and they were still finding new decks and new archetypes in it that people were excited about. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh shit, we have another pack we have to throw in the mix. So like, I think Innistrad was probably the last time that we had a format where it was just like mono drafting and nobody cared.
Yeah.
So in the interest of trying to keep this train moving.
Sure.
Jer.
Yeah.
You went away. You were here last week.
Yeah.
And you went away. So tell us what happened.
Okay. So I started off my wonderful adventure away from work with a trip up to Yellowknife.
Yep.
I was invited to go and speak at
Tarmacon.
At Tarmacon. And it was an awesome experience. Because everyone was telling me, like, why are you going to Yellowknife in October? Like, are you sick? Like, what's wrong with you? You know, you're taking time off to go to Yellowknife. And I went up there, and it was so charming. Like, the town is very, like, centric to gaming in general. It's small enough that everyone kind of knows each other, so everyone seems like they're in, like, a great mood and, like, good-spirited. Like, it was just a really good-spirited town. And it's great because if everyone knows each other, like you lose that anonymity. So everyone has to be on better behavior.
Nice.
So, you know, everyone just seemed super polite and friendly with each other. And it was just really cool. The game store they have there is just like, it's a good game store for the size of Yellowknife. Like put in perspective, I'd say like Red Deer and Yellowknife are probably on the same page, Jay.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and like a comparison that Scotty might know is Barry. Maybe yeah. Barry's bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's small, but it has, you know, all of those things that you need. Like it's got a Walmart, it's got, you know, a couple box stores, it's got its McDonald's like everywhere else. Like, but it's also got a lot of like just unique to Yellowknife type of things. They were very proud to point out that their Yellowknife was the highest crime rate per capita for Walmarts or whatever like that. So. You know, it was some wild stuff. So I get out there. I was brought out by the Tarmacon board, and what they are, I don't know which one came first, if the convention came first or the games night came first, but what they are is they're just like a gaming group. They get together every second week. They have a games night. They play 40K. They play Magic. They play all kinds of board games. They just get together and game, and they do it every couple weeks. And they have this board that puts on, you know, a convention every year. So that's awesome. I sit there, I go play, I go see the store, I hang out with these guys. They're just all super friendly. It's just an awesome time. I get shown the town. The town has just got all like this cool history to it, all kinds of crazy stuff there. the gold mines that were there, they have like enough arsenic and Yellowknife to kill the population of the Earth three times over. Like just some like wild facts. So I get to this convention, and one of the things like I'm there for is like they want me to do some celebrity games of like things like the Resistance, and it seems like I was brought up as a ringer to beat like the local guy who beats everyone at Magic to come up there and beat him. And then like do my presentation. So I did a presentation on the transition of a casual tabletop player to a competitive player and like things that you need to do and things you need to recognize. And one of my big focuses in my talk was like playing the game correctly, like trying to clear up those rules, things that people do wrong all the time that you always can tell. Like when you sit down at a table, you know, you're playing against a new player because he does this. You know, he taps out to cast his creature pre-combat and then attacks into you with no tap mana and no cards in hand.
Or the old, you know, like post-combat those... haste guy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, like, all of those little things. So that was my talk on it. And, like, it would have been great if we had a bigger group for it, but it was a very intimate setting for that. But still, like, I had some great questions. I had some fun. Face-to-Face had sent me out some stuff, so I got to give out some shirts. I threw some packs to people because opening packs is one of the best things about Magic. Like, just did some awesome stuff. I ended up playing in like a one-on-one sealed event, and that was really cool because I opened up my packs, and as I was doing my deck building, I had the whole crowd around me, and I was explaining like what is my process for building a sealed deck. And like the community is very, very unique in the sense that like I don't think anybody has net decks there. Like they all go out and they play their games days, they all do their Friday night Magic, they all play a lot of Magic, but everyone brings their own brew. Like they are like pre-internet Magic, which is like super cool. Wow. So it was like really, really interesting to like interact with these guys and stuff like that and see like these young players who kind of have it in their head. Like I had the kids who are pulling the decks out of their pockets and sitting down and playing them with like 150 card decks that are all like wrinkled up because they don't have any sleeves, and like playing like good rares in the decks because they just don't know any better. And it's just like, it was so awesome because it's like, this is the Magic that I was introduced to.
Wow.
Yeah, so basically you traveled back in time.
Yeah, so I had a table there, and I was doing some gunslinging. I was, you know, talking to people about Magic and all that kind of stuff, so it was really, really cool in that sense. And then to go, you know, a step further from that, we had, like, the setting and everything. I got to play that tournament. Then I got introduced to, like, all these other people who were doing their games, so... I got to sit down and play some Netrunner, like the new living card version of Netrunner, because I used to play a lot of old Netrunner with like a buddy I always mentioned, Nick, on the podcast. Like, Nick, he and I got into Netrunner in a really funny way. Like, I literally bought out that Sentry Box store that Jay knows about of all their Netrunner cards because they just randomly had a big box of it, and they tried to sell it to me for $75, and I offered them $50, and they gave me that, and I just started playing Netrunner. And the game's like really fun, so I got to sit down with like the Netrunner group in town and play some Netrunner with them. And that was a lot of fun. And I played some Resistance, and I watched a game of, no lie, 25 kids who were probably like in junior high at best play a game of Wolf.
Oh, nice.
It was the most ludicrous thing I'd ever seen. Like kids playing Wolf. It was just wild.
Hmm.
So they have this convention. It's at this high school. It was a 1-day affair. They had a whole bunch of like local vendors, so guys who had like just crazy comic book collections that they were selling off theirs, the guy who like runs like the local like swap meet table, so he had like DVDs and PlayStation games and all that, the local store, a lady who imports a whole bunch of like Japanese goodies and treats and stuff like that had a table. So like they had all these like really cool vendors, local artists who were selling like their art and doing caricatures and just really cool. The other like big guest that they brought in was the team behind Captain Canuck. So I don't know if you know Captain Canuck.
No.
Captain Canuck is like a Canadian Captain America. They had like TV show. Which
yes,
was
I see
really
it.
Cool. Yeah, and like it was
2013 TV series.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, they had the guy, they had the producer behind the TV series. They had, oh my God, my brain is going,
Richard Comley?
Richard Comley. Richard Comley was there.
Yeah. And Ron Leishman was there too, I'll bet.
No, it was, Fadi.
Oh, okay.
So he was one of the, like, the producers behind the TV show. So they had the TV show set up. They had Richard there. He had gone to all, like, the local schools in the area and done, like, comic book talks with them and, like, little clinics and stuff like that. So it was, like, a really, really positive thing for the community. And
wow.
They had a booth set up, and they were doing a talk and, like, getting to meet them. And just a really cool event. They had a few hundred people there. It was a one-day thing. The show has so much potential.
Okay.
Like, everyone who was involved. I had an MLA come up to me because he was there. He was showing me his cosplay. Their cosplay competition probably had, like, 50 people in it.
Wow.
Like, super huge into cosplay in Yellowknife, which, again, just blew my mind. Like, I just, I was having a difficult time putting some of these things together. So it really changed my perspective on a lot of stuff. So funny for them to talk about, like, it's the summer's coming up, so it's hard to get around because there's so many ice roads up there that when it's warm, they melt and they can't travel anymore. Like, little things like that, that's just part of the Yellowknife culture that I just thought was, like, so, so hilarious and so just altering. But everyone had a great time. It was just this awesome event. I hope they have me back because I just had a ton of fun. I played against that guy and I crushed him, and he's very, very good in his play. His deck building's a little suspect because in his sealed pool, he played two of the card that looks at morphs that are face down. So there's a couple things there where it's like, that card's not very good. But my pool was ridiculous. So it was just a lot of fun and a really great show. And, like, if you're ever up there, if you're ever planning on going up there for fishing or whatever the case may be, and Tarmacon's going to be on, like, plan it for the same time. Go check out Tarmacon. Just so much to do in Yellowknife that it's worth making the trip to do all those other things and check out the show.
Nice. So,
yeah. A lot of fun. And then I had to check out of my hotel on the Sunday. I had to check out by, like, noon. And at noon, they had games day going on because they had postponed it the one day for the convention. So I had enough time because my flight wasn't until 5. So I went in there, and it was funny because I played against 3 members from the board of the group that brought me up.
Okay.
Round tournament. So I played against a board member in each round, and I brought in the Jeskai combo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Of and course. It was just doing unfair things. The deck's very, very fun. I don't have the optimal build of it. I wasn't playing it optimal, but I was playing against like decks that were really felt like draft decks in a sense. Like, I was playing against the Abzan deck. I played against a Mardu deck. I played against a Rakdos deck. So, you know, they have rares from all the different standard sets and stuff like that, but they were really thematically.
Yeah, you're basically playing, like, themes.
Yeah. And, like, it feels bad to play the combo deck against them because, you know, you're not playing the same magic that they're there to play. But at the same time, everyone was having an awesome time. They had fun with it. I did what they brought me up there to do, be the ringer. So that was cool.
Yeah.
So, nice. Yeah. It was a really cool time. Again, I hope we get the opportunity to go back. And the way that they were talking at the time is that they want to see more of us. So, you know, maybe it'd be a thing where we could go up there and, you know, just represent. Because
yeah,
it was
a cool
show.
Sweet.
So, time to come, people. Have us back. After that, I got home, had a couple days at home. And then the wife and the in-laws and all of us went down to Northern California for wine and Northern California snootiness. So it was beautiful.
Sweet.
Yeah. I have a little timeshare in Napa, so stayed in Napa.
Do you?
Humble brags.
Humble.
Notice, Scotty, that we've never been invited or told of this place.
No, just now.
I've got them all over, actually. I've got a place in...
I've got them all over is the response to that.
Yeah, it is.
It's a point system.
It's one of those scammy things that we bought, and it actually works out really nice. But they've got a place in, like, where's Cottage Country in Ontario?
Muskoka.
Yeah, so I've got something up in that neck of the woods, just north of Barrie.
You realize that's dangerously close to my house, right?
I know. Like, and it's an awesome place.
So, what are we doing? When is this happening? When are you coming into my neck of the woods during cottage time, and when are you inviting us up? Like, what are we doing here?
Fucking shit.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to find out a time to go over there and, like, you know, have, like, a little getaway and
hang out there. Yes, we will. That'll be absurd.
Yeah.
What a dick.
All right. Maybe we'll just use it for Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's places in Vegas that I got also.
So what have you, are you just playing Jeskai Ascendancy Standard in Ascendancy Combo and Standard? Is that your thing, or?
Well, like, again, my time pre-Termicon was all spent for my presentation for Termicon.
Yeah.
So I was grinding that, and I was playing the drafts. Like, drafts were my, I need a break from this, so I'm going to play a draft. So I was doing drafts, and I was doing the Termicon presentation. And then I just threw together the deck at the last minute, like literally the night before I had to get up and first thing in the morning and get on the plane. I was building it. I didn't even have the cards, so I was buying cards in Yellowknife to try and finish the deck. Yeah. I literally had to trade for my last Jeskai Ascendancy while we were waiting for the tournament to fire.
Wow. What the fuck? That's so hilarious.
Yeah, so it's like I was just ready to play with three because, like, why not? So yeah, we played that, and I haven't really had a chance to play any Magic since then. Well, I had this couple days at home, and I was trying to sort cards, and I played a few drafts because play another draft. And then I went on the vacation with the family, so that there was just a no Magic time. And then I've been back at work, and I've got this new role, like I've got this foreman gig going on that I'm still trying to figure out, and I have to work longer hours. And yeah, so I'm excited to get to play some Magic. Actually, what I'm really excited for is the Calgary MDSS.
Nice. Yeah, I've been hyping the shit out of that. That's actually next weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. When this show comes out, it'll be the weekend coming up. Yeah.
Really? Shit.
Yeah.
And it's fitting that KYT isn't here because this is the first MDSS that will be streamed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We got streaming. So I'm going to be going down there. I'm going to be working with Jerry Gustati and Eric Chen. Eric Chen is just like local Alberta sicko, very, very strong player, and we're going to be doing coverage.
Nice!
Yeah, so
Jared, Jay, it's in Calgary. You should go and play it.
What's the format?
Standard.
Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jared can hook you up with the deck, and if he can't, then let me know what you want to play, and I'll ship it to you.
Yeah, this comes out on Monday. So yeah. If anybody hears this and then by the end of day, say Monday ish, wants to lend me a deck that's actually good and not garbage, then I'll play.
Tell me what you want to play, because I've got all the cards and I'm not playing.
I want to play the best deck.
So what is that? So Delver. There's no Delver. So it's Jeskai?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know what any of the decks do, and I don't know what the format looks like. So, I just want to play the best unbeatable deck.
So here's what you should do. You should go back and you should actually watch my stream archives.
Okay.
I have them all. I have them all on YouTube. You can go to my YouTube page, and I'm gonna pull it up right now, and I'm gonna put it in the chat so that you have the link to it, and you can watch all of my videos. And this is the public archive. I'm just gonna like totally one up, and this is where you need to be. Ooh, that's too far. Yeah. And then, and that's all you need.
Sweet.
You just watch all those and then pick a deck and do it.
All right. Great.
Yeah. There we go. Ah, that's what I want. I found it. I'm not internet stupid. I'll
start working on my fucking shuffling mechanics.
Don't do that.
Yeah. No summon cards to the top.
Don't do that. So yeah, that's sweet. Watch that. You can see what the decks are.
Jeremy, that you're doing that.
Yeah, so I'm like super excited for that. I'm going to have to like rush home because I have to do my house inspection on the Sunday. But we're getting the stream show. So if you're in Western Canada, you should go to the MDSS.
Yeah, come down.
Have a great time. Let me talk about you.
Yep.
If you are not, Watch it. Give us feedback. Tell us what we're doing great. Tell us what we're doing wrong so we can change it and do great things. And if it's great, then that just means that we're going to see more of it. And again, we got listeners from all over, and that's awesome. But we also have a strong contingent of Canadian listeners, and you know, this is ours. This is our series.
So check it out.
You know, Manitou Pie fans, this is our thing. You know, it's not, it's new. You know, some people complain about how we're always finding these crazy cheaters on the other guys' tour. Let's have the better tour.
Agree.
So, it's small, but that just means it's got a whole bunch of places to go.
That's sweet. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, I think that's
gonna a whole show.
About wrap it up. We're pushing 2 hours and 40 minutes or so.
Yeah.
With the clock running. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed the show. KYT will be back next week. We'll have Paul Chion on next week. We'll all be here next week.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's pretty gross. So make sure you guys go out and support the MDSS put on by our good friends at face2facegames.com and Mana Deprived.
And go to Yellowknife for CharmaCon because it was super awesome.
Go also, to Yellowknife for CharmaCon next year.
I don't
want to
talk too much about it, but those folk know how to do an after party.
Nice.
There was some karaoke and there was some wandering around the wonderful town of Yellowknife. So it was pretty good.
Nice.
We also check out my stream if you guys aren't. Mondays and Wednesdays, that's where we're at. I had Ari Lax on Wednesday. I had Mike Sigrist on Monday. Both of them playing their Abzan lists from the PT, but updated. Like, absolutely nowhere else are you going to get such a high volume of professional quality players on, you know, than on my stream, where they get to talk to you directly about the decks that they want to play. Like, it's so crazy. My life is so blessed, and it's all for you guys. So hopefully you guys can enjoy it. And if you like what I'm doing and want to support, then go hit up that Patreon. It's all good for me.
Ain't no stream like a Scotty Mac stream.
Ain't no stream like a Scotty Mac stream. I have so many people. I truly believe that I am, like, the most entertaining, least watched stream ever.
What the fuck?
So that's the thing, people. You want to watch it before it was cool so you can be a Scotty Mac hipster.
It's true.
Because you're already listening to the podcast.
And you know what? It's been good because there's a lot of people that, you know, hit me up on Moto and I'm playing and they're like, oh, you know, great big fan. You know, thanks so much. And great work on the A-team. And I had somebody that actually commented and they said, hey, do you remember when you had Conley Woods on and you guys played a commander game and did nothing but talk about porn all night? That was hilarious.
What the fuck? I don't even remember that.
You don't remember that? Yeah, we were totally talking about porn stars and all that sort of shit. It was hilarious.
That's fucking sweet.
Yeah, so it's just, I laughed. I'm like, yes, that was funny. So, yeah, it's all good. So check it all out. You know what's up. You know what's up.
What's up?
So, fuck you and good night.
I love
heavy metal
well.
Sucks.
Question mark? You don't want to do it, eh?
I'm just really fucking begged. I didn't think I would talk that much on this show.
It's too bad.
Yeah. I feel like I should, but I'm so fucking
tired. You really
should. Like, my voice will crack in the middle of it.
I think that just adds to the beat.
7 hours and 16 days since you took your love away.
I go out every night. Keep on
dead. Oh, man.
Your love away.
That's so good.
What the fuck?
Oh, man.
Alright.
We tried.
Yeah, you tried. You almost got me.
I thought we jump started the Boosh motor there.
You almost got me.